I think he was right in that particular election. It was a thing of a choice between him or Howard, and it was all about Rudd. Now, the opposition had a whole ad campaign that they'd already paid for to go on Kevin struggling, because Kevin's slogan was Kevin 07 during the 07 election, so they were doing a thing called Kevin O'Lemon.
Yeah,
so this is where you. So this is actually where, in the cruelness of politics, if you're looking at a party who's saying, we have good policies, the only thing that's got us threatened right now is the fact that everyone seems to not like the style of the guy that we've got leading. Now, this is the logic that's being spoken out there. And Labor's gotten the bump, and Julia's going out there and has kind of kicked open the door on a couple of the issues that needed the door kicked open and some dialogue to happen, because the mining thing was a debacle of PR, man. If the government had actually come out and delivered the message right of what it was, the miners would have been shut down in a second.
How many are there, John? Just curious, do you know?
How many what?
How many miners are there in Australia?
What, actual mining workers?
Yeah.
Oh, I can find out for you.
See, I'm only wondering because of the inordinate sway that the industry has here. You know, even West Virginia, I mean, you know, the mountain state, you know, coal is West Virginia, right? Well, coal only accounts for 7-point-some-odd% of the gross state product. And yet it owns the entire damn government.
Well, it's because there's so much actual, you know, such a chunk of the economy that they can claim to be theirs, and this is part of what the
right.
Whole
but that chunk. What I'm getting at, John, is that chunk is artificial insofar as isn't the single largest export leaving Australia? Isn't it coal headed for China?
Yep.
And see, it's a big chunk of our exports as well. And that accounts for an artificially inflated value, I think. Because if you take that out of the equation, I don't know what Australia's trade status is, but if you take coal out of our equation here, and I mean, I'm not saying it would be a bad thing to do. It'd be a good, but the fact of the matter is, if you take it out of the equation here, then our trade deficit with China balloons.
Right, right. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. And it would be a similar situation here. And this is why, see, and this is on this like soup. This what they were calling the super profits tax here, right? Unfortunately, it was a stupid name. To call something a super profits tax, I think, just is open to being twisted around in too many ways. But what it was is they were going to remove the old royalty system, wholesale royalty system, from all the from Australian resources, and they were going to change it to a much larger tax on the profits after all cost, which is actually, in all cases, when it comes to development of new projects and things, a better deal. Because you don't start paying any tax on it until it's actually making money. But when it's making money, you're going to pay. And you're going to pay 40%, starting at about, I think it was 6% profit. And it was going to be really hard hit. But the whole point is, these are finite resources. You only pull them out of the ground once. The people need to be paid properly for them, while we have them. Right?
And by the way, Gail just shot me a note, John, telling me that 1% of the Australian workforce is mining. 1%.
Right. Thank you, Bob. I hadn't found it in those terms yet. But that is some of the weird reality that's going on here, and the miners started this like massive ad campaign thing, where they basically lied to the Australian people. They said, you know, mining got us through the great financial crisis, which is bullshit. Mining kept ditching jobs through the crisis while it was most of the other...
Right, because they perpetually continue to mechanize. I mean, remember, the American coal giant Peabody is hard at work down there.
Oh, and you know what they did, Bob? As soon as this thing was you know, announced that they were going to do this thing, all the companies said, I love this. And everyone flinched again, Bob. It's one of these moments. It's like going, when are you idiots going to learn? They went, well, you know, those projects that we were going to start here, well, we're just not going to do them here anymore. And it's like, well, fine. Someone else will. But everyone went like, oh, no, to Fortescue Meadows. Oh, no, to all the rest of them. Going, don't run away. When there were people in Australia that said, hey, you know what, if they don't want to mine it for that, I can get the money together in 2 days to create a company to mine it and keep the profits in Australia. Let them go. But they were able to fear everybody by doing these ad campaigns, showing the guy out on the mine and then going, who's it going to hurt? And a clever camera shot, and suddenly you're in a busy city going, everybody.
I got a sneaking suspicion that some of the same ad goobers are working on the same campaigns there that are working on them here, John.
It has to be because, you know, with what's going on in the Gulf and reality's coming crashing down really, really hard on people. And there's going to be a big push to stop doing things so carelessly and so thoughtlessly. Because, I mean, that's all the whole BP saga is. It's not giving a crap about anything but your money. And people are starting to give a crap about things other than their money. I mean, I just... watching what's going on in the Gulf of Mexico, man. Lives, generations, ruined, lost, gone, see you, bye. So, you know, it's again those last... We're entering what could be one of those last throws fights. But if it's not now, it ain't ever going to happen, Bob. If what's going on right now... But I think you're right. Everything we're watching... is, you know, reality is stacking up against those that refuse to see it.
It is, John, but the other side of the coin is that we are seeing, because now that they're talking about global belt tightening,
Bob, I have the counter to that.
But what we're seeing is a concerted assault on the social welfare state on a global basis.
What country has bucked that trend?
You guys?
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, right? Because when this all happened, former Prime Minister Rudd was on his way to Canada for the G20. So last minute, you know, there's swearing in, and the very next day, you know, our new Deputy Prime Minister Wayne Swan goes, you know, trotting off to Canada. And when he comes back, you know, he talked about, you know, the global belt tightening, blah, 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 blah. But he said, however, you know, I do take pleasure in saying that because of the measures of spending money and keeping people in work, that his government, because he was the treasurer under the previous government, had done, where all the rest of the nations of the world are shooting to have their deficits by 2013, Australia is very likely going to be back in a surplus.
You know, it's good. It's a good thing Australia is surrounded by water, John. It really, really is. And it's a good thing I'm as pale and prone to sunburn as I am. And by the way, you might find this interesting as well as the other Australian listeners. You guys know what a hateful and junk science-laden economic cesspit the Heritage Foundation is, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, Jason writes in and says, Australia is deemed the third most economically free nation on Earth. He said, interesting that with a $15 an hour minimum wage, the Heritage Foundation ranked Australia the third most economically free country. The U.S. came in eighth.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
I hope Australia does buck the trend because there's creepy stuff going on out there. David in Tennessee reminding me that even the Dutch voted in a government that's center-right for the first time in 30-plus years, anti-social welfare, very anti-immigration, and vociferously, violently anti-Islam.
Here's an interesting one. Here's one where I think, so far, at least in just rhetoric, Julia Gillard's taken, I think, is probably doing something very smart. Gail used the term emotional intelligence with her. And she, because one of the big issues has been the scaremongering over the boats coming here, she made some statements saying, I want to change the whole debate about immigration, and I want to change the whole debate about the big Australia plan. And she actually is creating a whole or reorganizing departments to change them into a sustainable Australia, which not only incorporates what your immigration targets will be, because she said you just can't have blanket immigration targets, because you don't want to create communities with no services, and you don't want to be sending people to places that don't need them, and you don't want to be avoiding the places that need them, like in the Northern Territory. She talks about all these different things, but how infrastructure, social planning, all this stuff has to go around. Not just shooting for a bigger Australia, but like a well-planned, sustainable one, and that encompasses
right because of course we all understand that unmanaged, uncontrolled, out of control growth equals cancer on a societal or a corporal the basis. Hey John, I'm running out of it, but man, I'm glad you got to ring in. And hey, we got more work to do, getting the system back.
Yeah.
Oh, joy.
Yeah. People can log in with a whole bunch of different stuff.
Oh, yeah. Do that, please.
On the webpage, too. Yeah. Everybody, you can log in with Facebook. What do we have? Facebook, Google, Yahoo, OpenID. And Twitter coming soon. And if one of those accounts that you sign in with has an old one of our accounts with the same email address, you should be able to connect them. So hopefully you'll be able to get your old registrations back that we had previously. Otherwise, go nuts.
Bingo. And, I think, among other things, having people participate, and we got to remember, we're going to have we'll have noobs in the room. Perhaps when we do the history lectures out of Concord University, and that ought to be a nice warm-up, as well as commenting, a nice warm-up for what goes down next month out in Vegas.
Yeah, that's what
might be a whole lot of new friends out there.
Yeah, and the idea was to make it as easy for people to come in, leave a comment, and participate.
Exactly. Thank you, John. Thank you for everything.
All right, brother.
All right.
All right, man. Take care.
Have a great day. Bye now. Oh, I missed those days of conversations with John Fox. That was a lot of fun. And I promise we will get this stuff taken care of. We really, really will. We've got a few minutes left and a couple of blinking lights remaining on the phone. Hey, welcome to the program.
Rob.
Hey, what's up, Cossack?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm pretty good. Sorry about the hold time, but you're still there, and I'm happy to hear it.
I'll wait.
Wait no longer. What's on your mind?
First of all, you heard about the Listening to America tour.
No. Am I going to regret this?
The Pete Peterson put together?
Oh, yeah, I'm going to regret this.
Oh, yes. You're
By listening to America, he means telling America to bend over and grab its ankles?
Exactly. And unfortunately for him, the people were not as swayed as he thought they were. And they kind of fought back.
Oh, good. People were cranky?
Oh, were they cranky?
Maybe cranky is the first step on what Reverbo was talking about, you know, make it personal and you know, get a little pissed about this.
Exactly. I mean, they were plying the populace with, we can't cut this and we can't cut that. We can't cut the military. We can't cut. And people are saying, no, we need to start taxing the rich. We need to start cutting the military budget. We need to. All the things that they didn't want to hear is what they heard.
Well, that explains why a freak like your senatorial candidate in Florida, Marco Rubio, is out there hooting and hollering that it's time to make the Bush tax cuts for the rich people permanent and do it now.
Yeah, it ain't going to happen. It ain't going to happen. Not even accidentally. People were saying things like, oh, I don't know, the Defense Department needs to be cut by 10%. No, it needs to be cut by 15%. No, it needs to be cut by 25%. These are things they didn't want to hear. And this was coming up over and over and over again, no matter how much they primed them to say otherwise.
You know, I've got an idea. Let's keep all the defense contractors happy and keep making stuff to blow things up. But let's stop the stupid wars. That would amount to a 25 or 30% cut in the defense budget, wouldn't it?
That's one of the things they were talking about, even though they were told they couldn't do that. They said, screw you, we're going to do it anyway. Which I thought was kind of cute.
Oh, that's rich. That's exquisite. Well, Cossack, I'm glad you did take the time to wait, and I'm sorry the time was short, but we'll have at it again, okay?
Have at it.
All right. Thanks, Cossack. Later.
Bye now.
Oh, the idea of Pete Peterson getting a bit of a comeuppance is a pleasant thing. And that's it for the program this evening. Tomorrow night, of course, prayer meeting Wednesday. Do be here. Be here, please. And thank you for being here this evening. And this is an evening that has absolutely flown by. Thank you for tolerating my little fit of pique and temper in the first hour of the program. I try to keep strapped down, but sometimes I get loose, despite my best efforts not to. Thanks to everybody who makes this program everything that it is. First of all and foremost, you, who by your contributions of your time, your energy, your ideas, and yes, your financial support, make this all possible. Thank you. We are moving into July. We're doing it with a monkey off our back, but we're moving into July. Thank you to Lottie in the chat room, to our news ninjas Gene and Susan, to our blogger Texas Betsy. John Fox, whom you just heard from, is many things to all of us, many hats on that man, webmaster, web designer, musician extraordinaire, and host of All Foxed Up, as soon as we find a nice comfortable time slot for it to come back in. Thanks, John. Thanks to our IT professional, Peter Godbold. To Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. WhiteRoseSociety.org is the single greatest reason there is still liberal radio in this country to the extent that there is. Beginning with the White Rose Society in 2002, Ben Birch literally, single-handedly saved it. WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. You know why they are. You know why I say that they are. Because they are. Thanks to our op-ed correspondent at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, Cavalcade of Crazy, Reverbo. You heard from him this evening.
Keep an eye on the website for the latest coming from his mind into the electrons of the series of tubes and landing at headonradionetwork.com. Thanks to our Southeast correspondent, Matt Osborne, Osborne, Inc., OSBORNEINK.com. And thanks to my head writer, David, in Tennessee. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Cussing and discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A minute past the hour, and we are midway through the broadcast week. This is The Horn. I'm Bob. And we just got on under the by the skin of our teeth. This business of having the internet go sideways a few minutes before every program, it's seemingly for the last week, is getting a little tiresome. Not that I'm whining or anything. It's just that, well, I don't know, it's like being backstage and getting ready to walk on stage and then having cold water thrown on you. A little frustrating. Just a little. But be that as it may, I'm on, you're there, I'm here. Hey to everybody in the chat room. Nice little group already gathering there. Well, you know what? It is the middle of the week. It is downhill to Friday. More than that, though, it is much more than merely hump day. Because you see, the deacons have filched their last piece of marble cake, their last little piece of Mississippi mud cake, the last bowl of cobbler, and they are working their way up toward the sanctuary. Because, well, brethren and sisters, you know. Oh, yes, you know! You absolutely do know. It is Hallelujah! Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the Horn. Glory! Yes, indeed. Let us get started then, if you would, please, by asking our choir master, the Reverend Minister of Music, to come forward and bring and offer the opening hymn. If you please, Mr. Minister of Music.
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen!
Amen.
Let me hear you say, praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
Let me hear you say, I will enter the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
I will enter the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
And
and it's all tax-free. Hallelujah!
Hallelujah!
Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity. Whoever said religion should be free?
Ooh, ee, ooh, ah, ting, tang, walla, walla, bing, bang. I love you. Come on in, brethren and sisters. Quit hanging around out there on the street corner with the sinners. Come on in. Come on down that blood-red carpet and get on your knees, brethren and sisters. Get on your knees before the altar of common sense. Lay your hands upon the subwoofer and feel them healing waves of reason just a-rolling through your body. Glory, 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 as you connect on high. Somebody hand me a snake. I'm going to roll around a little bit. I am Bishop Bob Kincaid, and this is our Cathedral of Common Sense. It is Prayer Meeting Wednesday, the holiest day of the week. Glory, glory, glory. Yes, yes it is. And I tell you what, brethren and sistren, Every now and then, I get a little reminding of what it is to have the gift of prophecy poured out upon one's noggin. I do. I offer you, I understand it probably seems a little bit, off key, to offer you a flush phlegm ball at the beginning of Prayer Meeting Wednesday, but how can I not? How can I not? Consider, if you will, the following words. They'll make sense in context.
He might even want the GOP to win in November. He used the lame duck Congress to force the rest of his agenda through. They'll have nothing to lose. They've already lost. So they'll be eager and willing to get even with the voters, which is what Democrats do. You throw them out of office, and boy, you are going to pay for that. And then Obama will blame the Republicans on all of his tax increases and Social Security and Medicare costs on the rich, because they'll be in charge. He'll be in Congress. That's his plan. It isn't going to work. It isn't, but Obama's not going to be able to blame the Republicans. I know a lot of you are definitely afraid
what?
Of this.
Wait. Okay, back up time. Let's do this again. I got to go back to some of this.
With the voters, which is what Democrats do, you throw them out of office, and boy, you are going to pay for that. And then Obama will blame the Republicans on all of his tax increases and Social Security and Medicare costs on the rich, because they'll be in charge. He'll be in Congress. That's his plan. It isn't going to work. It isn't going to, but Obama's not going to be able to blame the Republicans. I know a lot of you are deathly afraid of this, because this is what always happens. They'll be able to blame the Republicans.
No, Mersey Dotes and Dozy Dotes and Little Lambsy Davy and Kiddly Davy too. I think I'm going to start speaking in tongues like Flush. But there it is, the gift of prophecy. Because how many times on this program have we discussed the fact? Have we discussed the fact that that Republicans do actually behave like that?
we discussed long ago, before the 2008 election even. The Republican Party did take a dive. They did. That's why we got, you know, the ghost and Mrs. Moron for their nominees for the presidency. They didn't want to win. And lo and behold, there's Flush Flimball laying it all out as if it was our idea. Really, so many times with the right wing, all you got to do is apply the Sergeant York rule. Come on, we have. Well, I don't know. Maybe the newer kids, the noobs have. But you know the Sergeant York movie, Gary Cooper. I'm a wondering which way if you was a trying to get back to the lines, Mr. German Colonel. I'm a wondering which way you'd be going through these yar trenches. There, I would go that way. That's great. I'm going the other way. Whichever way you'd have said, I was going the other way, because I know you'd be trying to lead me back to the German lines. So I'll be going the other way. Bang. That's what it is. Listen to the Republicans. Watch what people like Flush put out there for public consumption as, you know, his theorizing over what Democrats are going to do. And you'll hear, actually, what they have done, are doing, or plan to do. And this is, you know, this is part of that.
Republicans couldn't have stopped any of this. Republicans have not supported any of this. It ain't going to happen. But in the traditional way of thinking, I'm sure Obama believes if the Republicans win the House, then he gets to transfer blame to them. Because next year is when the excrement hits the fan. That's when the tax increases go up. That's when you lose even more liberty. That's when your disposable income shrinks. And guess who's running the House? The House or Congress? Republicans.
So drinking Obama, again, Rush?
Democrats think they're going to be able to blame Republicans for what happens next year. But they forget. There's an alternative media. It got Den Rather. It's going to get Obama. They're not going to be able to get away with the stuff they used to be able to get away with.
Okay, now he's on acid. Thanks to our friends at Media Matters for America, MediaMatters.org, for that clip. Some poor little intern sits every day and cuts this stuff into little chunks, and it's got to be like rusty razor blades running through the poor intern's ears. So what is this? This is the setup? Is this the setup for Flush understanding understanding what's going on, what's going to happen in November? The Republicans who don't seem to have learned that old line about if you're in the first rule of holes, if you're in one, quit digging. That they're kind of sunk. And we got crazy. We got right-wing crazy. It is just flowing like a mighty river of vomit out of the right wing right now. Sorry, it's dinner time. Probably shouldn't have done that. I'll defer to horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner. But I think the phenomenon, as David in Tennessee reminds me, I think the phenomenon that we're discussing here is transference, isn't it? Flush is taking what he actually thinks the Republican Party has done, is doing, and will do, and transferring it over to us. You know, things like they're going to take away your freedom, when in fact we've lost more freedoms under the Republican Party in the last 8 years than in most of the history of the entire United States combined. Yes. And of course, you know that any time they bring this kind of stuff out, you know that the Republicans have something up their sleeve. I got a good question for you. This being prayer meeting Wednesday.
No, really. Yeah, the Sharon Angle, remember, she's a good Christian, says she wants women who've been raped or done by daddy to go ahead and have the baby with its little floppy ears and eyes going two or three different baby arm coming out of its head. You know, incest children. Wants them to have them incest babies. Because we just need to be patient and faithful and let God's little magic work. Well, apparently no one's shut her up yet. Come on, Sharon, just go to ground. Be quiet for a little bit. No luck so far. Sharon Angle, by God, is out there explaining what the employment problem is in Merca.
How would you have voted on that bill to extend unemployment benefits?
I would have voted no, because the truth about it is that they keep extending these unemployment benefits to the point where people are afraid to go out and get a job because the job doesn't pay as much as the unemployment benefit does. And
all them poor people out there just getting rich, raking in that unemployment. That $309 a week, by golly, you can do some high living.
We really need to do is put people back to work. So if you want to ease people back into work, what we need is an unemployment benefit that pays part. You know, you go to work, you have...
Dumbass! That's what unemployment does. It does not pay your full salary. It pays a percentage of it. My Lord in heaven! I am. I'm gonna roll on the floor and handle a snake, drink me some strychnine, and start speaking in tongues at this stuff. We need an unemployment plan that pays parts. What it does! Darn.
Something of a safety net here in unemployment, but just to give them full unemployment benefits and then extend those for 2 years or more gets them not only out of the working class, but it also depreciates their skills so that they're not really able to go out and compete in that
work. They can't chop that cotton no more!
Workforce. And so that's what we really want, is we want something that stimulates a group of people to go back into what we know is
that
free
market. You have an interesting
view,
actually, about jobless benefits. I want to show people what you had to say in what is now a celebrated interview about jobless benefits. Listen to this.
You can make more money on unemployment than you can going down and getting one of those jobs that is an honest job, but it doesn't pay as much. And so that's what's happened to us, is that we have put in so much entitlement into our government that we really have spoiled.
And it was really getting the slidey toad to Guy and Gimble in the wave, and all Mimsy with the board grows and the moment wraps out graved. Her nuts! Her crazy! Makes my eyeballs ache, my ears bleed. Shee-ma-nee! Please keep talking. For God's sakes, please keep talking.
Our citizenry, and said, you don't want the jobs that are available.
So you're saying that these tens of thousands in Nevada, they're sitting on their couches, they're all spoiled, they don't want to go out and get a job, and I'm going to cut off your benefits. That's your attitude.
Spoiled. Come on, John.
But you said they're spoiled.
Well, I said that it had spoiled our citizenry. That's a little different. They're not spoiled. What if...
No, it isn't. The citizenry is made up of people, not rutabagas and cauliflowers and cabbages, last I checked. That's a little bit different.
What happened is the system of entitlement has caused us to have a spoilage with our ability to go out and get a job.
You think a bunch of people are sitting...
It's caused a spoilage with our ability to go out and get a job.
Spoiled cabbages are sauerkraut, aren't they?
Caused a spoilage with our ability to go out and get a job. Well, first there's that whole what jobs thingy. Kind of hard to ignore that. What jobs?
You know, you just can't wait till all those incest and rape babies move into the population out there next to the other unemployed proles.
How long until she whips out the welfare queen thingy? Any guesses?
out there saying, you know what, this is great. I get my unemployment check coming in. I'm not going to go out and look for a job.
No, they're not.
That's what you're implying.
What I'm implying is that there are some jobs out there that are available because they have to enter at a lower grade, and they cannot keep their unemployment. They have to make a choice now. We're making.
Is it me, or is this woman just nuts? I mean, dangerous crazy, not harmless. No, the evil, the evil, just wicked, nasty. Did you hear? Well, there are jobs out there, but they're entry level and they're not the same grade. So let's see. And the difference is because, you know, it's not like you're getting that they're free universal health care while you're on the unemployment. $309 a week. So maybe you take a job at $10 an hour. 8 hours a day, that's 85 times a day. That's $400 a week. That actually pays more than the unemployment does. Wait a minute. That's the problem. That's the problem. We've got too many of those $10 an hour jobs in America. Because what we want is those workers to be on their knees, terrified, fit to beg, and absolutely unable to speak up about any sort of, you know, unsafe working conditions or, you know, hey, I lopped a finger off. Did you hear about the butcher who backed into his meat grinder? He got a little behind in his work. Those entry-level jobs. Because they're all over the place. Really, I think about that comment from last night about, you know, ditch diggers. It used to be, you know, hey, you better study or you'll wind up digging ditches. Now we have 100 people lining up for one ditch digging job. And it's no longer you'll wind up digging ditches, it's you'll wind up working at the 7-Eleven. The Rippy Mart, you know. But let's go back. I mean, let's get our full dose of.
Them make a choice between unemployment benefits and going back to work and working up through the ranks of that job and actually.
Well, how now? You know, we all know I'm 47, right? How does one go about working up through the ranks at 47? What if you're like me and you've got three kids or so? They're all teenagers, and they have this just annoying habit of eating. What do you do with them? You know, with that wanting to eat and wear clothes, you know, and live in the lap of luxury, called clothed and fed and roofed and all that all the time. What do you do with them? Because I'm kind of at a loss. How do you deal with it? And see, and you're 47 or, you know, 55, 57, 60. And you know what? There aren't any entry-level jobs for you. Welcome to Walmart. Bob Dole says, welcome to Walmart. There aren't any. There aren't any. Remember, this is a woman who says, as a Christian, that her job is not to, as a senator, would not be to try to bring jobs to Nevada. Evil, evil, crazy.
Building up a good wage again and building up some seniority in that job. And what we need to do.
Yeah, but see, if you're 55, you don't have time to build up any damn seniority. What are you going to do? Work till you're 100? Go get a paper, you know. Oh, well, you know, you're 60 years old, but you start out in the mailroom or a cub reporter working the police desk. Oh, wait a minute. Journalism's dead. Bad analogy. Build up some seniority.
is make that unemployment benefit go down, not just completely remove the safety net from them while they go out and go to work.
So you're saying if people lose their job through no fault of their own, as many have during this recession, Sharon Angle's solution is to cut their unemployment benefits so low so they're somehow going to go out and find jobs that don't exist. How does that make any sense?
There are jobs.
Who is this guy? I kind of like him.
That do exist. That's what we're saying, is that there are jobs, but those jobs are entry-level jobs, and they don't pay what the worker
so
can make a living
on. People sitting out there
on.
Now who don't have jobs to say, I'll take anything. I'll work at McDonald's. I'll go
That's
dig
right.
ditches.
And
nope, there's the ditches. Sorry, buddy, you're not going to dig any ditches because there's 15 people in front of you for the ditch job.
Then we should start to supplement with the unemployment. But just to give them an unemployment benefit and then say, if you get a job, you don't get unemployment anymore, that's really kind of hard scrabble there. It's hard to get your...
No, dummy. Hard scrabble is taking away the benefits in the first place. Which, you know, your party just sort of kind of, well, no kind is about it. They did. They did that, you see. They did. Oh, God. I got a feeling this is going to be a rather odd little prayer meeting. A very interesting essay sent along by Maura from Dan Rather. Writing over at Huffington Post, he says, under a column titled Spiritually Bankrupt, we're shifting gears here. But you know what? We're really not, because, you know, the right wing is morally and ethically bankrupt. The church is spiritually bankrupt, as Dan Rather notes. This whole nation is damn near bankrupt, both literally and figuratively. He says, this is written with a sense of sadness and some mixed feelings. While not a member of the Roman Catholic Church, I have a great respect for the church and its followers. The church has done and continues to do much good in the world. I've seen it among the poor, the downtrodden, and the ill all around the globe. But with a team of other investigative reporters, we uncovered some things that should be brought to light and pondered. Earlier this month, Pope Benedict XVI issued the first apology to priestly abuse victims from St. Peter's Square, a gesture intended to show that church leadership is finally ready to confront this growing scandal. But in reporting a recent story, Rather writes, we found that behind the scenes and in court, the church has taken a much less contrite and more confrontational position. Our investigation found that in various dioceses across the United States, church leaders were going great lengths to avoid making amends with the same victims of abuse they claimed to be trying to make peace with. Facing waves of lawsuits by now adult victims, we found that the church has reacted more like a big business than a sacred institution. Wealthy dioceses have claimed to be broke and taken the drastic act of filing for bankruptcy. Only when forced to open their ledgers in bankruptcy proceedings does it become clear that several of these dioceses were actually flush with assets, cash, real estate, parishes, that it could have made available to victims seeking restitution. And he goes on. Just look up Dan Rather on Huffington Post if you want to read all of it. But the upshot is that the financial shenanigans are sickening. In Wilmington, Delaware, the most recent diocese to file for bankruptcy, church officials have tried to limit liability by claiming the property owned by its parishes is separate from its own. It all came down to a $120 million investment fund administered... What? Yeah, a $120 million investment fund administered... by the diocese. Various diocesan entities, including schools, parishes, and cemeteries, had invested $75 million in the fund. The diocese argued that that money should be off-limits to victims' lawsuits, but the bankruptcy judge didn't buy it. On June 28th, he ruled that all of the money should be up for grabs. As it should be. As it should be. This is an amazing level of mendacity. Yeah, there's no irony to the fact that this is the same Dan Rather that Flush, in that quote we started the program with, claimed was brought down. Juanita writing in, and she says, you know, many jobs that I've had have had no ranks to work up into. If there are ranks, the favorites get it. True. Marty asking, the entry level, isn't that a Walmart greeter? Get it? Entry, Walmart greeter. Welcome to Walmart. Shameless, shameless. This is this, and it goes on and on. I've got the audio here of that. Latest, what's his name, barber ad that's running for Congress down in Alabama. The one where he's now resurrected old Abe Lincoln. Astonishing. But then this. Since it is prayer meeting, Wednesday, it would be inappropriate not to go here. This is a real hoot. Remember how Rand Paul, remember how he's a doctor and everything? You know, he's an ophthalmologist from the National Ophthalmologic Association. Yeah, him. Well, Rand Paul, you know, and you don't just get to be an ophthalmologist, even a libertarian one, without going to medical school. And this isn't optometry, this is ophthalmologist, you know, MD. It was a beautiful thing. And what a forum for this, too. Because last Friday, this past Friday, Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, attended a meeting of the Christian Homeschool Educators of Kentucky, otherwise known as CHEK. Christian Homeschool Educators of Kentucky, you know, homeschooling where they teach the children about what happened after the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor and killed Lewis and Clark. Yeah, that homeschooling. So he decides, you know, when you're talking to the Christian Homeschool Educators of Kentucky, you got to think that you're probably in a pretty friendly audience, if not a pretty weird audience. And so, you know, you're thinking you're going to get some easy softball questions. And probably to the person who asked this, this was an easy softball question, because the answer is obvious to a Christian homeschool educator, but this is a beautiful moment. Here we go.
And I'm happy to take a few questions if you would like. I wonder if you could understand under planning law, what
No, this is nothing.
Say I was only taking easy questions. I think I can handle the first one. I became a Christian as a teenager, and I actually gave, you know, there was some debate in the last election, you know, about who's more pro-life or who is or isn't pro-life, and I made the point that, you know, a lot of people don't make public statements until later on in their life. My first public statement on the position on abortion when I was 17 in my church, because I stood up in front of my church and I said, you guys aren't doing enough about issues that if you believe in these things, you need to stand up and say something about them. And they would sort of, they were a more liberal church that I was in as a child.
No, a liberal church.
I didn't think they were doing enough, because if you care about these issues, you need to stand up and say something about them. I'm going to pass on the age of there. I think I'm just going to have to pass on that one. So, all right.
Huh? What? Well, the question might have been a little hard to hear, but I don't think you missed out on the answer. The question was, and it was Tinian in the background, was there a point in life when you became a Christian? Well, he answered that. And his second question, also, how old is the world? No, Now, see, at a Christian Homeschoolers Educators of Kentucky meeting, the obvious answer to how old is the world is slightly younger than the recipe for bread, the written recipe for bread, slightly younger than that. That's what they want to hear. And lo, Jesus did walk down the road with his disciples, and there was a great big old dinosaur. Thank you, the prophet Bill Hicks, peace be upon him. And Jesus said, lo, that's a big dinosaur. Because, you know, Adam and Eve went to church every Sunday, where they were Christians. Thousands of years before, you know, well, not many thousands. It's only a couple thousand years old. Thousands of years, a couple of thousand years before there was a Christ, they were Christians. And they went to Sunday school in the back of a brontosaurus. When it was wet, they sometimes flew in on a pterodactyl. A pterodactyl. That's what you... He was supposed to say the earth is 5,000 years old. And everybody in the Christian Homeschool Educators of Kentucky would have been, yes, hallelujah, Brother Paul, praise Jesus, yes. And started passing the snakes and drinking the strychnine, rolling on the floor and all of that stuff. But he took a powder. I'm going to have a pass on the age of the earth. I think I'm just... gonna have a path to pass on that one, because while they would have loved it if he had said the earth is 5,000 years old inside the meeting of the Christian Homeschool Educators of Kentucky, the rest of the world would have said, time to put the gag back on Rand, because they didn't want to hear. See, he was really between Scylla and Charybdis. Because on the one hand, if he told them the truth, that the earth is actually billions of years old, and that humanity itself is, and its early progeny are something approaching 3 million, then he would have been in a real pickle. Because he needs those knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing, right-wing freakazoids. He needs them in the voting booth, badly. So instead, I'm going to take a pass on that one. So hopefully some enterprising new journalist will continue to pester him. Dr. Paul, how old is the earth, Dr. Paul, please? But he did throw him a sop, a sugar teat, if you will. He says he thinks that... the church really should be separate from the government. But still, he said, well, but you could have prayer in public schools. And how are you going to do that and have the church separate from government? Yeah. Speak, Rand! Speak! Tell us about Timmy down the well and the age of the earth. You know, that's somebody I want to see on tour together. I'd like to see him go on tour with little Timmy Jibo. Wouldn't that be fun? It's not like Timmy's going to be busy playing football or anything out in Denver. He's just he's just bench candy to sell jerseys. He's only here to sell jerseys, praise Jesus. Yeesh. So that's the beginning of the evening. And it's got some real flavor of wacky about it, doesn't it? Let us go straightway and forthwith to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob. How are you doing?
Hey, Brother Matt Osborne, what's up?
Just calling from South of Strange with an update. Of course, you probably have noticed that I have been missing from both my blog and the website and from the phone calls.
We were about to send out a posse.
Well, I have to tell you, I was exfiltrating the United States. I was in Canada receiving my orders for the
heathen communist.
down now.
Up there, probably up there, even having you some of that socialized medicine or something.
That Islamo social communist fascistic something or other.
That's the stuff. That works fast too.
That's right. Metric system, for the love of God.
And have you come back? Have you come back spelling words funny too, like putting U's in color and saying A after everything? I want some socialized medicine, A. Don't you, A?
Don't do it to me. Don't do it. I just fixed things. Look, here's the thing. I spent 6 weeks in Canada as a kid and came back with a Canadian accent.
Oh God, you're the man Canadian candidate. Jesus, the next thing you know, what's her name from the Murder She Wrote lady will be walking around in a leotard with a Jack of Hearts the sandwich board on her. Oh, you're screwed.
Sorry. Yeah. See, this is why I can't do radio. I laugh too much and too hard. I tell you what. I was up there and I was with Monica. And she had never been to Canada before, and I have to tell you that she was almost not eager to come home.
Well, see, but you cheated. You showed her Canada when it's warm enough for human life.
Exactly. And this is why I said, no, before we go emigrating, you are going to have to come back here in winter and decide if you want, you know, to live in this. And my grandmother is 93 and told her about the 220 inches of snow that sometimes show up. And I don't know if she's so eager anymore, but we did have a great time. And I did see a lot of interesting things, including the daily newspaper. It's a completely different world up there, my friend.
Daily newspaper?
Yes.
Like journalism newspaper?
Oh, yeah. Actual deeds of journalism going on. Real questions. And what's interesting is a completely different conversation. It's like, okay, you've heard about this hydrofracking business, right? We're all talking about oil.
Yeah,
it's
Marcellus Shale, right? Creepy business. The people's faucets run blue flame, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Canadians have a completely different attitude about this sort of thing. And their leaders actually ask these questions. Their conservative leaders ask about this. Their conservatives sound like Alan Grayson, almost, in a way. It's very, very interesting.
Oh, my God. So their liberals are bomb-throwing Trotskyites then, right?
That they must be, I tell you what. Did you know, by the way, that there's a burgeoning health insurance industry in Canada?
No.
No. See, this is interesting. That the way Canadian health care works is that you can have private insurance. It's usually supplemental insurance. Just like in France. Everybody has Medicare in France, and people buy supplemental insurance policies. Basically, you can buy a Cadillac plan for probably about as much as it used to cost to buy a standard health insurance policy.
So it drives rates down?
Yes.
Well, everything, although the scales have fallen from my eyes, everything becomes clear now, man.
Yes.
We can't have insurance rates falling.
This is why Canadians pay a lower rate of taxes. Have I ever told you this?
They pay taxes? I thought those were
Canadians
evil.
Canadians pay taxes. Well, they pay taxes, and that's what they call a mandate up there.
Now, don't you be bringing the gay into this.
Yeah, the details are really amazing. Right? The closer you look at the Canadian system, the more you're convinced that something is really fishy about your own country. This is why, when Republicans got to power back in the 90s, you'll remember that some of them were bragging that they didn't have passports, had never held a passport. This was actually grounds for voting for them in their eyes. Do you remember this?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, that started our tilt into this isolationism. Of course, 2001 comes along, and here comes the world knocking at your door.
And that's the real lesson of September 11th that, you know, people still haven't figured out. If you ignore the world, that doesn't make the world go away. So the world came knocking on our door to remind us it was there, and it was really ugly, wasn't it?
Not at all pleasant.
Yes, and look how it has warped us.
Well, can you imagine that there, I mean, it blows my mind. There are places in America where you can stand with your feet slightly apart with, you know, I'm thinking like up around North Dakota, Montana, places like that, you know, Minnesota, and you know, the very tip of Idaho and Washington. You can stand with your feet apart, one leg in America and one leg in Canada, Matt, and the leg that's in America can't get sick. But the leg and the arm and the half of you that's in Canada can.
See, there you go.
Not that anybody wants to, but, it, you know, such is the frailties of this human life.
Yeah, and you know what it amounts to? They pay lower taxes in Canada. They have a competitive advantage with our ability to win industries and jobs. I mean, I remember a few years ago we had a car plant that was going to come to Alabama or Toronto, and the company decided on Toronto because, hey, we don't have to pay for health care plans there.
And why wouldn't you?
Exactly.
That's like David in Tennessee just noted to me. He said, speaking from experience, it is much easier to found, foster, and grow a new business in Canada than here.
Oh, absolutely. And my uncle is the ultimate proof of this.
Wait, you have relatives who still live there? This is getting worse.
Oh, yeah. I'm thinking that South of Strange may wind up north of the border. It's like, I would love to live in a place that, you know, I could actually take a small business that is making some money, and I could actually scratch out, you know, an existence there. Interesting. Interesting thought. It's like almost a libertarian paradise, don't you think?
Dang. Reckon we could send Ron Paul there, or maybe they wouldn't take kindly to that.
But here's what Michael Moore needs to do next. Do you remember the stunts he used to pull, like having a healthcare competition between the U.S., Canada, and Cuba? I think we actually need to have a small business competition. Where is it easier to start up a small business with a family and, you know, kids?
Well, you know, that reminds me of something that Jason shot me a note about last night during the program. The Right Wing Heritage Foundation has Australia ranked third most economically free, and yet they've got a $15 an hour minimum wage. They have Medicare for all, and they've got a positive business community.
We keep talking about this massive transfer of wealth. We keep talking about how people are tricked into voting against their interests. How does it keep happening? How does it keep happening in America, but only in America? It's an interesting story. But we've got a lot going on in the world. I tell you what, have you watched what happened to Mr. Boner today?
Yeah, he had a bad day, didn't he?
He had a really, really bad
day. I mean, when you get pilloried by Joe Scarborough? You know, that's that drunk at the end of the bar in the old Bewitched shows who you know, sees her appear and disappear and just throws the flask out of his suit. You know, when you've been taken out by Joe Scarborough, you know, it's over. Especially in favor of, you know, icky, creepy, nasty, sort of the gimp-like Eric Cantor. You know, it was unprecedented, I tell you.
And meanwhile, have you watched the Kagan hearings at all?
Yes, I did. And I'm glad you brought me around to that, Matt, because, I mentioned that little prophecy feeling that I get sometimes, and I got it with the Rush Limbaugh thing, but I got an even bigger whopping dose of it. I mean, I had to run out and buy me a fresh bottle of strychnine and a couple of new snakes when I heard Arlen Specter turn me into a prophet. And I wish I had the sound. But did you hear him say that, in essence, John Roberts had perjured himself at his own confirmation hearings?
No. No, I didn't catch this.
I had to drag myself up off the floor and, you know, crawl back into the chair. I couldn't believe it. No, Arlen Specter said not. He didn't use the word perjury.
Mm-hmm. Of course not.
But he said that he had made a complete, I believe the phrase was a complete mockery of his confirmation testimony via the Citizens United case.
Mm-hmm. Citizens United. What an overreach. What an overreach. Yeah, as a matter of fact, I was just thinking about something. I wanted to read something to you really quick. It's just a paragraph. Let me find this.
Okie dokie.
This is something that ran at the Huffington Post late last year and, of course, went down to utter obscurity. But
well, but you know what? It's okay. Comfortable down here.
All right. This was called Cadillac Plans, Mandates, and the Proletariat, which is as lefty a title as I could possibly come up with. I mean, use the word proletariat in a sentence. We're an anarcho-syndicalist commune.
We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive office for the week, but all the decisions of that officer must be ratified at a special bi-week. Shut up! Yes.
All right. This is a description of something that happened in our call center. Remember, I used to work at a call center.
Yes.
Our call center had a special program providing special service to one of these special plans.
It's also special.
Away from the call force, huh?
It's also special.
Away from the call floor, we referred to those special callers as star-bellied sneeches. The woman across the cubicle row from me was on that line of business, and the only difference between us was that she had a 30-minute class on the plan's pharmacy benefits package. Whoop-de-doo. We gave the exact same services, and in fact had near-matching quality reports from the call monitors. The only special thing her callers got to do was sound snooty. This is true. This is what you need to know about Cadillac plans. I wrote this way back when, and it's like I have had this kind of crisis of faith. You probably noticed I haven't published enough in the Post a lot lately.
You've been a little quiet. But then again, I thought that was because you'd been kidnapped by Canadian Islamofascist terrorists in red and black plaid flannel lumberjack shirts.
That did not happen. Fortunately, because then I would have to sing the lumberjack song, and you don't want me to sing.
Oh, no.
Please, don't sing. But here's what I wrote towards the end. As far as middle and lower income America is concerned, the Cadillac concern and mandate mongering is premature and overblown. The online left is erupting in traffic from aggravated progressives, with too much of it directed at the White House. But this is what my fellow progressives need to understand. Those call floor employees all went on strike for 10 minutes to watch an inauguration. Every one of them applauded and cheered. These daughters of hill folk with bad skin, anchor babies from Russellville chicken plants, and disabled vets like me, we are the proletariat. You guys with the fancy websites, you're not us. We're the people who work for insurance companies, who work with insurance companies, who deal with insurance all day and serve insured people all day but cannot afford or else have no access to insurance ourselves. Here is what you need to know. In the end, our bottom line and continued good health is what matters to us. Interpretations of the 14th Amendment regarding corporations are not. I said that, and within a month, there was a Citizens United decision.
That's when you may very well get your own little the frayed purple velvet robe with the little half-stuck-on moon and stars on it. Isn't it just creepy when you get those little prophecy moments? Or maybe it's just sad. It's just sad that you can that it's all that clear. It's all that out in the open now, Matt.
Yes. It's all out in the open, but you're the only person who really wants to see it. And there is practically an industry that is devoted to obscuring it from you.
You know, in many ways, hearing you talk about this, Matt, reminds me of
Mike Cooley's brilliant lyric from the Drive-By Truckers in Gravity's Gone.
Mm-hmm.
I've been falling so long, it feels like gravity's gone, and I'm just floating.
Oh, what a great song.
Ooh, I may have to play it.
You may have to play it? Let me tell you my favorite Drive-By Truckers song that is appropriate to this story you've been telling tonight, doing this first hour, is that song about the righteous path. I'm trying to stay focused on the righteous path. They have been selling one thing and delivering another. It's so funny. It's like this southern place that I live is like the epicenter of all this insanity. And so I understood it long before I think the mainstream understood it, even just the blogosphere understood it. It just took a while for the world to catch up with me. And I don't know. It's like I'm just wondering, have I even been on the righteous path? Is that what I have managed to do as a blogger? I'm reassessing, and I have written some stuff that will be coming out soon in the blog, and I plan to premiere it at the Horn as well.
Beautiful.
This is something that I wrote while I was in Canada. There's the year of blogging dangerously is what I call it.
How could you not? I mean, you're in Canada and everything.
Yeah, 150 different kinds of roses. This is what my brother, my dad's brother does. He runs a nursery that is full of roses and trees and plants on 180 acres. And I have video where we rode the four-wheeler through his property, taking pictures and video of these plants. Just rows upon rows upon rows. It's the biggest nursery east of the Rockies in Canada. And this small business has managed to grow and grow and grow. And part of it is this debate about health care, because Canada settled it a long time ago. And when you take a look at the world and stop being scared of the world, you find that this arrangement has already been figured out.
Yes. Yes.
So, yeah, I want people to look at where we are and see Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist who won't stop. That tribble on his head is in possession of his brain. That's the truth.
I think Rand Paul's like Joe Dirt, and he had an opening in his skull, and they just put the wig on, and it grew together.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, he came up with a great phrase. I've been using it at the Huffington Post. I've been popping up that Atlas duct video that we did, too.
Oh, is it moving?
I tell you what, that it was almost 1,400 views, or actually over 1,400 views at YouTube. And it also went up at BuzzFlash for a little while, but I'm not sure how many plays it got there.
Wow. While I do have you for just a minute.
Sure.
While I do have you for just a minute, I got to ask you a question. I need help here. And I got some audio to play.
Okay.
You know, I was born down there. You weren't. You're there. I'm not. Can you watch this Rick Barber ads? Can you watch these darn things? And is that Alabama? Is that the South? Or is that just more of this libertarian teabag and horse shit?
It's everything, isn't it? You know, here's the thing. It's not going to work. He's not going to get elected. This is what you have to understand. The more desperate they get, the louder they get with this stuff.
It's
only when they actually win primaries that you wind up with Rand Paul not wanting to take a question that is good enough to ask about the president.
Yeah, how old is the earth?
Yeah, what do you believe?
Well, you know, Elena Kagan got first of all, dumb question.
What is a medical doctor doing on the Senate Judiciary Committee? I realize it's the Repiglicans' business who they put on their minority part of the committee. But really, Tom Coburn? Tom Coburn, the dirty rat bastard son of a bitch who stopped in its tracks a program that will give aid to homeless female veterans and their children, stopped that, and yet he is... Oh, my God, did you see this, Matt? Tom Coburn
yeah,
sat there and asked...
Infuriated.
I'm not asking you, Ms. Kagan, what it is that the Constitution says. I'm asking you what you believe. Do you believe that we have inalienable rights, like it says in the Declaration of Independence, the law of our land? And regardless of the fact that I'm a little bit iffy about her not quite liberal credentials, the fact that Elena Kagan was able to sit there at that table and not do a W.C. Field spit take at that freak. Declaration of Independence, law of our land? Huh? What? You know, yeah. I admire that. I admire. She didn't even crack a smile.
Yeah, there was a wonderful moment today. This was the, we need a new phrase, I think, in the culture. Let's go with release the Kagan, all right? I want the Kagan released.
Sorry.
I keep waiting for her to just sit there and shake her head at Jeff Sessions and just say, Senator, I can't wait to talk about these things. I can't wait to render my decision in your imaginary case. Did you see, who was it that asked her about the fucking Twilight movie?
No.
My French, yes.
No, see, you get to use that word in front of, when you're, no, some right-wing freak asked her about Twilight movies?
Yes, you didn't see this?
No.
Okay, I'm pulling...
Oh, where's the bottle?
I'm pulling out the link. Hold on.
I'm pulling out the tequila bottle.
Okay, here, watch. Kagan asked about Twilight, and now I am sending it to you by email. Stand by.
Standing by. By the way, you're getting fan mail. DJ Kid A of the People's Mixtape, otherwise known as Michael. Just sent a note regarding your commentary about the truckers. He said, me and Matt must think alike. That's the truckers track I used in Volume 1. It's in my top three truckers songs.
It's a great song. It's a great song. I think my best video ever was actually done way too early in my career. It was a truckers video. The one that I did about George Wallace. Okay. There you go.
Okay.
Hopefully. You're going to freak out. I'll read the quote. Klobuchar. It was Senator Amy Klobuchar.
Oh, wait. Stop. That's one of ours.
Yes. But this is, you had an incredibly grueling day yesterday and did incredibly well. But I guess it means you missed the midnight debut of the third Twilight movie last night. We did not miss it in our household, and it culminated in 3 15-year-old girls leaving over at 3 a.m. So I have this urge to ask you about this. Kagan, I didn't see that. Klobuchar, I keep wanting to ask you about the famous case of Edward V. Jacob or the vampire V. the werewolf. Kagan, I wish you wouldn't.
You know, that's almost forgivable. That is almost forgivable because when you consider some of the other stuff that she was getting, yeah. You know, Tom Coburn, it's almost as Tom Coburn quoting from Blackstone's commentaries on the common law of England. That's almost as incongruous as a question coming from Amy Klobuchar about the Twilight movies.
What, pray tell, did the doctor have to ask about?
Well, it was all about, see, what I want to know from you, Miss Kagan, what I want to know from you is, do you know, not what you want to do as a judge, But do you acknowledge that there's natural rights, like Blackstone says right here? You know, he had a very famous son, was a magician. They called him Harry.
Mm-hmm.
But Blackstone, right there, says there's natural rights. And it's okay to use a weapon to defend them. And do you love Jesus and the Second Amendment, Ms. Kagan? Do you? I don't think you do. But there was a beautiful moment when Elena Kagan drilled Lindsay, I live in the world's largest transparent closet, Graham, but right between the eyes, with a line about the Jews on Christmas.
You know, it occurs to me that we're missing a great opportunity here, Bob. We should totally be live blogging these hearings or something.
Yes.
We should totally.
No, see,
totally.
Someday when the horn is fully funded, that's where I call you and I say, you know, dear Matt, plane reservations made. You're flying to D.C. You're going to sit and you're going to live blog the hearings. And you do.
That's what I want to do. That's what I want to have happen.
And then, you'll get promoted from just Southeast correspondent. Well, now you're a Canadian correspondent. You know, what am I going to do with you? This is all just a big title hustle for you.
Southeastern correspondent is just fine.
Well, you were in Southeast Canada, weren't you?
Yes, I was.
See?
True. The funniest thing that happened in Canada, though, I have to tell you, is I got an email. I got some interesting.
They got that up there too. Well, I will be dipped.
You got high speed internet out in Cornhill, New Brunswick, which is exactly what it sounds like. Cornhill, New Brunswick. I had high speed, and I was checking my email, and I got this wonderful wing nutty email that was somebody trying to start an argument with me while I was on vacation in Canada, and while I had this sticky post up on my website letting anyone who visited Osborne Inc. know, hey, I'm in Canada. It's like, why would I argue with strangers on the internet when I'm on bloody vacation? But this is what we need to be doing. We need to be talking about the vacuity of not just the news, but this questioning that's going on. It's like the media universe and the political universe are just so freaking banal.
Yes.
It's just got people making noise. And I wanted to ask you about Senator Byrd.
Yes.
Because he had a big deal to do with a certain recent Supreme Court nomination.
Yes. And while I prefer not to speak ill of the dead, that's just always going to be a problem for me with him. What he did with Samuel Alito, you know, who also interestingly participated in that decision on Citizens United in the same on the same side as Justice Roberts, and who also sat there before the Senate Judiciary Committee, having sworn an oath, and lied like a rug. When he talked about how all the respect he had for Stare Decisis.
Yes.
And chucked that right out the window.
Yes. He did that. And he did much else besides in his time. And, you know, the thing is, at some point you have to bury him. You don't have to praise him, but you have to tell the truth about him. That's all I really want. I just want a religion that will bury me and tell the truth about me. That's all I really ask for. I don't ask for hocus pocus. I don't ask for a magic show. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you know, it's very true, because I was talking to Agnes the other day, and I said, you know, when you get around to when it comes time for me to take the big dirt nap, which I hope is a long way off.
Let us pray.
Yeah, indeed. Or not.
As we prefer.
Precisely. But I said, look, here's what I want you to do. Because funerals are such uncomfortable affairs. I want you to have a big projector screen, and I want you, before anybody says anything or any music or anything else, I want you to play the Chuckles the Clown scene from Mary Tyler Moore. And I want everybody in that room laughing their ass off. Because, I mean, and there's a million reasons for it, Matt. You know, I think about the shortest poem that Robert Frost ever wrote. It was called Forgive, O Lord. And it said, Forgive, O Lord, my little joke's on thee, and I'll forgive thy great big one on me. And just get them rolling with laughter, and then the full plan is, afterwards, we'll prop me up in the corner and have a big old Irish wake, even though I'm neither, you know, not that Irish and not that, and certainly not Catholic. Well, you know, some traditions are worth co-opting. You know, the Roman Catholic Church's predilection for buggery I can do without, but the wake is it's a nice idea. But even the teetotalers have to get just absolutely shit-faced blind drunk. Because the next morning when they wake up feeling like death on a popsicle stick, I want everybody who had been there to say, you know, down the road when that happens and they're feeling terrible, I want to say, I haven't felt this bad since Bob Kincaid died.
You just revealed the entire reason why the Irish have funerals the way they do. While I was up there, I actually talked to an Irish waitress who was just totally opposed to having to go back to Ireland. Tell you what, like, you should have found a man here or something. I don't know. You need a green card marriage. Hey, you know, it's legal. No law against it.
No purse.
You know, it's actually harder for you to bring, if you go out of the country and get married, it is harder for you to bring your wife to the United States than if you brought her as a fiancé.
Actually, I do kind of know that because I know somebody who went through that.
See, yeah, I know somebody who went through that too, and it's just amazing. Coming back into the country, this wingnut, and I had started to tell you about this wingnut, had said that, well, you know, America is so much easier on immigration than other countries. I'm like, no.
In what? No.
No. No. I just crossed the border from Canada to the United States, and it took far longer than when I crossed in the U.S. to Canada.
And, yes. But, no, it's easier to get into America.
Yeah, it's of course. They're convinced of it, but
I mean, was there anybody at the border asking, your papers are not in order?
It's because they've never been to Canada. They've never been outside the United States.
Were you able to bring back any Cuban cigars?
No, I was not.
Oh.
I should have thought of that. I didn't think of that while I was up there.
Oh, no, they get real testy about those. Well, and personally, I think the immigration and the customs guys, you know, just seize them and smoke them themselves, but that's because I'm a cynic. No, but the fact of the matter is, you know, Robert Byrd, and I thought about this again today because there was somebody in the Kagan hearings, or you know, some babbling the twit who complained about how brutal it was for Sam Alito during his confirmation hearings. And it doesn't take much to get me time traveling. But I've been thinking all along through all of this about how my senator, Senator Byrd, effectively made it a certainty that Alito would be confirmed when he announced that he was going to vote for Judge Alito because he was quite certain Judge Alito would protect the First Amendment right to freedom of religion and Jesus. And he knew he should vote for Samuel Alito because he had received mail from conversations, handwritten letters of conversations that took place around the dining room table, and there was little coffee stain rings and some donut sugar on them. So he knew they were real letters that he'd received in the real live U.S. mail. Never mind the fact that it was mathematically impossible for him to have received any such correspondence because of the difficulty getting mail to his office in Washington, D.C. And with that, we got a guy who declared corporations to have more personal rights and civil liberties, the living, breathing, human American person.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And sadly, I don't know what he thought of it. He never said anything about it. Robert C. Byrd did live to see the fruits of his terrible decision foisted on the American people.
He did. He did. And Alito is a disaster. There's no doubt about it. What interests me, though, is all these people saying that Kagan is some kind of, she's this secret centrist. Oh, my God, she's a centrist! That, you know, is somehow going to swing the court to the right. This is not true.
No, I just don't think she's, I don't think that she is going to share the liberal credentials that Stevens brought to the bench.
Just follow me here for a second.
All right.
Think of a scenario here. We're already going to have another Supreme Court nomination coming up. Do you realize this?
There's
already been a retirement announced.
Yes.
So what we're going to have is a new Supreme Court seat opening up. And Kagan was replacing kind of a centrist, right? Am I correct?
No.
Who is she replacing?
Stevens.
Excuse me?
Stevens.
Okay, she's replacing Stevens.
And he was the closest thing to a hardcore. Well, you know, I mean, he grew up in the New Deal and had New Deal sensibilities, even though he was a Republican.
Right.
And he came to be the closest thing to a liberal that the court had, short of Justice Brennan.
Now, if Elena swings the court to the center, just how much difference is there between Stevens and the center? Just let me ask you that.
It's significant, but, you know, again, it's a matter of having a voice out there that will at least speak truth to power, even though they are hopelessly outgunned.
Right. You want a liberal voice on the court.
Yes.
That's what you want.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Now, I think it'll be easier or harder to get a liberal voice on the court when you have a new retirement coming.
Say again, please.
The next thing he has to appoint a Supreme Court justice. Because he's going to have to. We already know.
Yes.
Is it going to be easier or harder to get that kind of justice on the court? Because ultimately, here's the thing. He doesn't get to change the...
I think this is not criticism, but I think you're setting up a false continuum.
What I'm saying is that he doesn't really get to change the makeup of this court altogether until he gets to replace a conservative justice. You understand? That's the ultimate battle he's eventually going to have to fight. Sooner or later, he's got to outlast one conservative to change the court.
Yeah, because that's the other point. All these whether it's Sonia Sotomayor or Elena Kagan or whomever comes next, these are all people who are replacing our people. There is no net change to the makeup of the court. You know, we need either Kennedy or one of the rats to shuffle off to Buffalo.
So what you're talking about here is basically the need for one of these hardcore conservatives to be the next one to retire. Because we're running out of liberal justices to retire. Are we?
Yes, we are.
Okay. So,
and I would say after this next one, there really won't be another liberal justice. Three out of the four will have been replaced anyway.
That's my point. Is we're running out of justices on the left to replace in a 5-4 court. And if you want to change the makeup of the Supreme Court and get away from Citizens United type decisions, and you're basically going to have to change the makeup of the Supreme Court when one of those conservatives goes away. What I'm getting at here is the long-term goal. If our long-term goal is to see the court shifted again away from that kind of thinking that gave us the Federalist Society, Citizens United decision, then we have to look long-term at the court.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's another thing worth remembering is that, you know, Alito and Roberts, barring something delightfully fortuitous, are going to be on the court for 40 more years.
Yes.
because court appointments are generation shifters.
Oh yes.
They don't simply happen in the here and now. You know, long after you and I are gone, Alito and Roberts may still be on the bench, screwing things up.
This is unfortunately true.
And you know, Fat Tony Scalia will never ever retire. He will die in his robes. Clarence Thomas has never had such a cushy job. He will hang on to the bitter end.
Yes. Yes, I know. These guys will hang on forever. They will try. They will do their best to outlast Obama. But you're not going to improve the court until you have a Congress, a Senate, a president, and that are better for putting a liberal on the court.
And the question, even so, that you still have to answer is how much damage has already been done by this court. I think, in particular, of the rulings with regard to the Miranda rights, or rather the right against self-incrimination. You have to speak. You have to verbally assert your right to remain silent. The right to remain silent is the right not to speak, but you have to speak to assert it. And the Citizens United decision. Those two are pure poison.
Oh yeah, but see, what you have to do is you have to think. It's like my gun permit is not recognized in the city of Los Angeles. So maybe that needs to be my cause. Maybe I need to just take this new Second Amendment decision to its logical extreme and take my pistol with me wherever I go in Vegas.
You know, I don't want to come and bail you out because again, remember. Remember, these things, we're also dealing here, Matt, with the IOKIYAR phenomenon. It's okay if you're a Republican.
Of course.
Can you imagine what would have happened if some gun-loving liberal had strapped on and gone to a Bush appearance?
Well, yeah.
He would have been tasered with a high-powered scope at 1,000 yards.
But we had one Black Panther waving a baton who became, of course, a cause celeb for Acorn, you know, the whole Acorn scandal. I've detailed that in my video work. And it's like you had a guy strapping on an AR-15 and going to a town hall. And it's like, wait a minute. What? There's an enormous cognitive dissonance that goes on. Anyway, my point is this. I think that the court is a question that you're better off having Kagan go first. She's like the perfect pick because she's taking these ridiculous questions, and it's going to be comedy gold. Just wait. I can't wait to see how Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert tear this up, and they will.
And she's been disarmingly witty.
She has been. She's been disarmingly witty, which is awesome.
And going back, you know, going back to the Tom Coburn thing, even with that, Matt, she eventually looked at Coburn and said, you know, I don't think you want me being a judge making decisions upon what I view natural rights to be.
Mm-hmm.
You want me making judge-like decisions based upon what the Constitution says. And there was an implicit, you know, you hypocritical SOB element of that because what we want is a strict constructionist.
We wanted a serious decision, didn't we? We wanted the age of stupid to end, and we got somebody who can do that.
And now they don't like it. a little moment of funny, our pop culture correspondent, David from Maine, just sent me a link to some amazing stuff. You may have already heard about it, but are you familiar with Tea Party Jesus?
Yeah, I am familiar with Tea Party Jesus as of this afternoon. This is a meme that has shot around the world, let me tell you. Love Tea Party Jesus.
Pictures of Jesus with words from teabaggers in a balloon as if Jesus was speaking them. And this one just laid me low. It's a John Cornyn quote, you know, seeing as how.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it seems how, you know, he's one of those weird right-wing freaks on the that are interrogating Elena Kagan.
this blurb says, has Jesus speaking to the masses, and he says, it does not affect your daily life very much if your neighbor marries a box turtle, but that does not mean it is right. Now, you must raise your children up in a world where that union of man and box turtle is on the same legal footing as man and wife. If I started on that tequila bottle now and went straight through to 3 a.m., I couldn't come up with man and box turtle on a dare.
You know, that is true. That's the sort of thing that just happens all
the time. Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today, because it's prayer meeting Wednesday. Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to witness the holy union of this here man and this here box turtle.
Man and box turtle. Well, I tell you what, Bob.
It hurts. It hurts to stupid. It hurts.
It hurts. Oh, by the way, we need to have this discussion. We need to have this discussion about the word duh. It's not tough. It's duh. You have to pronounce it correctly, Bob.
Oh, is it duh? Okay. So it's like, duh. Okay. It's like T-A-O is not tau, it's dow.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, I'm home with it now then.
Yes. Yes. There's a certain dow of the word duh.
Oh, there certainly is.
Yes. And you notice that I usually boldface items, and I often add the little trademark symbol, which is my way of just, it's a shorthand way of indicating that we're talking about a dumb idea that lives on the internet, because that's where the stupid lives. The stupid lives on the internet, in the wing metasphere specifically. And we should talk about that again sometime, but man, I am bushwhacked. I have been JavaScripting all day, and I need to get off the phone and eat. So, it has been a pleasure, and I will talk to you.
Oh, it's been a joy, Matt, and it's been far too long. Don't be a stranger, brother.
And don't be a strangeness.
I'll not be a strangeness.
Bye-bye.
Later. Our Southeast correspondent, and that would be Southeastern United States and Southeastern Canada, that's Matt Osborne from Osborne, Inc., OSBORNEINK.com. Man and box turtle. I'm so not okay. I'm going to take a little break. And and while I opt for Gravity's Gone, I'm going to honor Matt's request. And this does seem appropriate. Yes, indeed. We'll take a little break and come back with your calls. Hey, we're stacked up. Don't go anywhere. Everybody gets a chance. These are the truckers, the patron saint band of the horn, the righteous path. On America's listener-supported liberal voice, The Horn.
righteous path, the drive-by truckers, and that line. We're hanging on, trying to keep on keeping on. And John Fox reminded me of something, or not reminded me, informed me of something. This is kind of, you know, for us Americans, this is a little painful. Today, after a conversation about it last night, see how the prophecy thing works? After a conversation about it last night, today, Australians got a $26 a week minimum wage increase after a two-year freeze. I'm not sure how that works out on an hourly basis, but yeah, $26 a week. Part of it was a raise in pay, and part of it was a tax reduction on low-wage workers. Imagine that. That kind of stings. And it reminds me of what Reverbo said last night, and I'm going right back to the phones. Reminds me of what Reverbo said last night about, you know, they're trying to wipe us out. They are really, honest to God, trying to wipe us out. And in the same vein, Robert writes in from Australia. He says, Bob, should the U.S. economy tank, God forbid, will Canada have to build a freedom fence to keep out all the illegal American immigrants looking for jobs and health care? You know what? If I was Canada, I'd have been started on that a year ago. The minute we started all of our national security border foolishness with these godforsaken, brain-dead, miserable right-wingers, they should have started building that fence, and it should extend from Washington. It should extend from Washington to Maine. Even the parts that are water should have a fence around it. Because the first people running for the Canadian border hollering, Lord, Lord, will be those self-same godless, soulless, motherless, brainless repiglickins who were hollering about their freedoms. Oh, and Robert adds, I'm a lumberjack and I'm okay. I sleep all night and I work all day. You guys just have to get your licks in, don't you? Let's go to the phones and see what's shaking. Ah, see, you're quitting on me already. I had a whole bunch. You guys, everybody bailed. What am I supposed to do? The whole thing was filled. And everybody quit. No patience. Matt adding a little something along the way. He said, here's my next letter to the Times Daily, which is the local paper where he lives. He writes so pretty. He said, it took about 5 minutes for the election of Barack Obama to become a call to arms. Gun sales, and more importantly, gun prices, skyrocketed. Gun shows are still being advertised as your last opportunity to get one while you still can. But if the president was supposed to serve sinister foreign agencies by collecting our guns, he's done a terrible job of it. In fact, the Brady campaign has given Obama a grade of F in every category they measure. His failure to disarm America retards the dark purposes of tyranny. Surely they are upset with him? They? You know, they? Those dark forces? Or maybe this president never intended to confiscate our firearms. Maybe his plan was to spend political capital on other things like health insurance reform. Maybe he doesn't actually care if Americans own more guns in 2012 than they did in 2008. Or, dare I say it, than in 1812. Is it possible the gun salesmen use baseless hysteria to promote their wares? The NRA links every jeremiad to another fundraising call. Perhaps there's a reason? Nah. I'm sure one of the regular contributors, and by that Matt means the steady and seemingly endless stream of right-wing gas bags, wing nuts, mouth breathers, and knuckle draggers, can tell us how the president's inaction on gun control is part of a secret evil plan to lure Americans into a false sense of security, or how the president has been frightened into inaction by armed teabaggers. I'm sorry, Matt says tea partiers. The explanation will be whatever it takes to not admit being a
Sucker. Woof. Now, by the way, just as an aside, just for the fun of it, let's check out a couple more. Let's check out a couple more teabagging Jesuses. No, no, Tony, says Jesus. You can't build a mosque at the site of 9/11. No, you can't. No, you can't. And I'll tell you this. If you do build a mosque, I hope somebody blows it up. I hope the mosque isn't built. And if it is, I hope it's blown up. And I mean that. The gospel according to Tea Party Jesus. A Rush Limbaugh quote from Tea Party Jesus. We've already donated to Haiti. It's called the U.S. income tax. Oh, if it's true and this thing has gone all around the world, I can see why. It reminds me of Al Franken's the supply side Jesus. Yeah, I know. You too. So, this is... Oh, this is a weird night. No, the whole Kagan thing just blew my mind. If you can see, to hear Arlen Specter, no less, to hear Arlen Specter complain that John Roberts had thrown his testimony out the window with the Citizens United decision. That's serial, or serious. Jim sending this along, an interesting list, since we've sort of been working this theme of what has been done to, not what has happened, but what has been done to this country. This is an, Jim tells me this is America's Infrastructure Bottom-Up Review by the American Society of Civil Engineers for 2009. Here are the grades for the United States of America and its infrastructure as compiled by real live, honest-to-goodness civil engineers doing science. Aviation infrastructure, D. Bridges, C. Infrastructure on dams, D. Drinking water, D minus. Oh, that's inspiring. Then there's energy, D. Handling of hazardous materials, D. Inland waterways, D. Levees, D. Inland parks, C. Railways, C. Roads, D. Schools, D. Solid waste disposal, C. Transit, D. Wastewater disposal, D. Wow. All those D's? All those D's, it sounds like, what? It sounds like, with all those D's, it sounds like the entire United States is hanging out behind the field house smoking dope during home ec class. Or shop. But you know what? All those D's, you know what it makes me think of? Yeah. All those D's we're making. In the stuff that really matters, drinking water, D minus.
Tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life.
You know, like bridges and inland waterways, drinking water.
Just my children and my wife.
Railways, bridges, levees, and dams.
Thank my lucky stars to be living here today. Cause the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away.
Aviation B. Hazmat handling, D. Park, C. But you won't do it in the park because the parks are closing.
with C-grade railways.
Come on.
From the lakes of Minnesota.
Which are toxic.
To the hills of Tennessee.
Which have been blown all to hell.
Across the plains.
Which have been covered with McMansions.
Sea,
that are full of oil.
From Detroit down to Houston.
Where nobody's got a job.
And New York to LA. Where there's pride in every American heart. And it's time we stand and say.
Really? Where our transit system just made a D. Where we can't dispose of our wastewater, cause that's a D too. What's left of it?
God bless the USA.
God better bless the USA. Because Lord knows the Republicans are doing everything in their power to destroy it. You know, except the homeless ones with children. We'll forget them. Yeah, but you won't stand on a bridge, Lee, because, well, the bridge has got a C infrastructure score, too. God Almighty. Maybe I've said this before, but maybe this is a good time to remind. Maybe we're better off doing a little bit of that God forgive America than God bless it. And all that infrastructure, where the hell did all that infrastructure go? Oh, look, it's in China, Afghanistan, and Iraq. Haiti, here we come. Ugh. Breathtaking. And by the way, just a little something you might find interesting. Jason sent along, the same Jason who mentioned the number three most economically free nation of Australia, according to the Heritage Foundation. He published an article called Exposing Faux Capitalism. And this is a real mind-boggler. He says Euromoney publishes a semi-annual credit risk rating of 185 sovereign countries. In their latest publication from March 2010, 8 of the top 10 are European socialist welfare states. Norway, Luxembourg, Switzerland, Denmark, Finland, Sweden, Austria, Canada, and the Netherlands and Australia. Funny, we're not in the top 10 of credit worthiness. Hong Kong and Singapore didn't make the cut, despite being seen as among the most economically free countries, as one 2010 report ranked them. Canada continues to buck old perceptions of being less economically free and successful than the U.S. by being ranked more economically free by the Conservative Heritage Foundation's 2010 Index of Economic Freedom, and more tax competitive for business by Big Four accounting firm KPMG in their 2010 report. Now, what does that say to these libertarian... The horses' rear ends. Yeah, David in Tennessee noting, free is a label on the second jug of Tide when Wally World has a buy one, get one sale. That's what free means in America now. But I mentioned this in my conversation with Matt Osborne, and I mentioned it on the program last night. You got to hear this. This is that crazy-ass Rick Barber, his Congress ad in Alabama. Why does it have to be Alabama? What? Well, there's a reason. Why ask why? Just sit and cry.
Mr. President, some argue that you would have been in favor of this tyrannical health care bill because you enforced the Whiskey Act of 1791. But that was an excise tax levied to service the...
Wait a minute! It's a new one! Oh, my God, I thought this was the Abe Lincoln one. He's responding to his critics who pointed out that, you know, Washington started the Whiskey Rebellion because of some taxation. This I gotta hear. Now, this is the guy again with the, as Keith Olbermann noted, the $4 George Washington fright wig.
Mr. President, some argue that you would have been in favor of this tyrannical health care bill because you enforced the Whiskey Act of 1791. But that was an excise tax levied to service the military debt incurred by the Revolutionary War. A legitimate function of government, correct? Okay.
Okay, that's a little head nod from the B-roll shot from the back.
Hey, if someone's forced
to... Here it is! Yeah, it's the Abe Lincoln Act! And, oh, this is good.
And he's got a guy with the Abe Lincoln fright beard. And a big old sort of makeup molded on mole on his face, you know, the kind where Uncle Buck says, here's a quarter, go pay some rat to gnaw that thing off your face.
Work for months to pay tax.
Now pay attention. This is, yeah.
Hey, if someone's forced to work for months to pay taxes so that a total stranger can get a free meal, medical procedure, or a bailout, what's that called?
Before we anticipate the answer to this question, may we note that this guy who desperately needs to be punched in the face or needs to just go duck hunting with Dick Cheney, maybe, may we note that he is just implied with it, you know, it is implicit in his statement that the guy is getting paid for his work because you're working for months to pay a tax. You can't pay a tax working for months if you're not getting paid in the first place. What that's called is the obligation of citizenship, you dumbass. But let's hear what he wants to call it.
What's it called when one man is forced to work for another?
Forced to work for another? Let's see. I would call that not, forced to work for another? It depends on how you define force, doesn't it? How about when one man is forced to work for another for sickeningly lowered wages with no right to collective bargaining or to have any sort of bargaining position whatsoever in what is called the at-will employment relationship? Yeah, we know what to call that. But who am I?
Slavery.
And that's the most sickening part of this. He uses an image of a Nazi death camp when he says slavery. You know, the writing above the gates, Arbeit macht frei, work. Work makes you free. And see, that's part of the sick pathology of these sorry bastards. They actually equate the notion of having to pay taxes with being gassed by Nazis. They think they're persecuted because they pay taxes. And they lack the intellectual depth to understand that taxes will often pay for things that we disagree with. Millions of liberals all over this country have spent the last, God, has it been that long? 9 years with their tax dollars supporting wars that Afghanistan, 80% of the country, if they could pull their tax dollars out of the war, would! But it's slavery. It's paying taxes is just like a death camp. It's just like being persecuted for being Jewish. I really want this guy to go hunting with Dick Cheney. And I want to get Dick a better gun.
We had a lot of blood to stop that in the past, didn't we? Now look at us. We are all becoming slaves to our government.
We live in perilous times, but we can't be afraid to speak out. Many good men and women have died for freedom, and I can't betray those sacrifices like so many Democrats and rhinos have. Don't be afraid. Fight for freedom so we can have morning in America again. Join our...
Oh, wait, we talked about that last night, too, morning in America.
It's morning in America. God, this guy's disgusting.
Army of voters on July 13th.
I'm Rick Barber, and I approve this message.
I got just one dumb question. Where is this clown, even if they're not running on... It's just YouTube crap. But even if it is, where is this clown getting the money to have these things produced? Because the production on them is pretty slick. Is this teabagging money? Has anybody in Alabama done the investigative journalism to find out where this barber, geeks, moron, jackass, where his money comes from? Because it takes some pretty much honest-to-goodness Jed Clampett walking around money to make these things. Who's making this happen for him? Who is making this happen for him? And meanwhile, out here in the hinterlands, just as Patterson Hood sang, out here in the hinterlands, hanging on to be keeping on. And I've got a hankering for that other one. That I mentioned. I got a hankering to hear that real bad. So we'll take a little break and we'll come back to your phone calls. Really, really, really. Three lights lit up now. Three open if you want to jump in the queue. Mike Cooley writes some brilliant, brilliant lines. And this is one of his most brilliant. And it's a song whose tenet could be espoused by virtually anyone in this country who has been thrown under the bus, left behind, whatever phrase you want to use, while Wall Street gets richer and our jobs go to China. I've been falling so long, it feels like gravity's gone, and I'm just floating. So here's one for the floaters on the horn. We'll be right back.
I went stumbling through the fog, trying to find the reason for the things she told me. She woke up sunny side down, and I'm still thinking I'd be proud to flip her over. Oh,
right, that part of the program doesn't want to cooperate, so we just won't ask it to. Dang gum, that song's wonderful. And I know it's about something completely different, but you know what? There are elements of Gravity's Gone that just feel like it's a little bit of a narrative on the American experience. That is those lush guitars, and that's an extraordinary piece of poetry. But you know what? Maybe it ain't so bad down here at the bottom. As long as we got each other to prop each other up when we get a little weak and a little tired and feel like we can't march another day, maybe it's okay. Because you know the bastards certainly don't want to let us up. You know, those are the ones with boots on necks, not poor little BP. We're the ones with the boots on our necks. And away we go to the phone. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
Hey, Jim, what's up?
Not a whole lot. Thanks for sharing that email I sent you.
That was just mind-boggling.
You know, who is writing the script for this thing? Ed Wood Jr.?
You just about got to ask yourself.
I mean, is it called Plan 9 for Interspace?
Plan 9 for the United States.
Exactly. And as I pointed out, it will cost, $5 trillion for 2 years. I mean, $2 trillion for 5 years. And, you know, that could mean a lot of jobs in this country to repair this.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I mean, that's there's something out there called the Apollo Alliance that proposes exactly that, putting this country back to rights and putting people back to work by fixing the stuff that's broken.
I mean, it would not take a whole lot to bring the whole rotten structure down. I mean, people just don't realize that. But
you ask who's writing the script, Jim, and, you know, I got an answer for you. The script is being written by people like Grover Norquist.
No, I know that. I know.
You know, this is the guy who wants to drown government in the bathtub, and he's winning.
Yes, unfortunately, I know that as well. And for people to be so, well, for the powers that be to be so blithely and deliberately ignorant of what is happening to this country, the mind is simply overwhelmed.
Yes.
Now, that report is generated every 3 years.
And this is not the American Society of Liberal Civil Engineers either, is it?
No, they're not. This report comes from all of the 50 states, and they get together and they compile these grades as far as levels of safety, acceptability, stability, all the things that, you know, make you feel safe to walk out of your door, to drink your water, to flush your toilet, and God only knows what else are parts of civilized society. And we get a 1.25 GPR on that. Like you say, Haiti, here we come. And yet we're throwing away all these trillions of dollars on these wars that will bring us absolutely nothing. Nets cast forth in which only that which is unprofitable is going to be ensnared. And this is what we have. And the trumpet tune sounds either one or two things, or both two things. Desire or up yours, America.
That's the, and I real, you know, I've been at this for a while, Jim, and you've been listening for just about as long as I've been at this. There comes a point when you start asking the basic question of when does it change? How do we fix it? You know, we had a year of promises of, you know, hope and change. When does it start happening? I mean, yes, I realize that some the more centrists would say, well, hey, look, you know, we got the health care reform. But we're at a stage in this country where, as far as I can tell,
Incremental change, any sort of incrementalism is wholly insufficient to the task, isn't it?
It's almost what a doctor would refer to as corpus inoperabilis.
Yeah. Inoperable body. Not subject to being fixed.
I mean, this crap started back in 19... I would say, if you want to give it a start date, it started back with Reagan. I would say it really became...
Well, I will agree with you, and I'll take it back a few years, because do you remember when Ronald Reagan ran against Gerald Ford for the Republican nomination in 1976?
Barely. Yeah, I do.
He was talking this same crap then, but let me take it back a step further. It also goes back, and, you know, funny how things roll around. It also goes back to George Wallace. It's 1968, and George Wallace is hollering about taking a message to Washington and getting Washington out of our lives. Well, you know, the best way to get Washington out of our lives is to eliminate the government itself so that even the good things that government does, it cannot do. Because bear in mind, you know, I suppose people like you, me, the Horn family, we have differing opinions of what constitutes good government from the other side. We strongly believe that government is doing its best when it is looking out for its citizenry, when it is actually promoting the general welfare and not the specific welfare, Jim, of 0.1% of the population of this country.
Well, you know, even George Wallace, to a certain extent, and I read this article, I still have the first copy of George that came out, the one that was published by JFK Jr.
Yes.
Even he, to a certain extent, recanted. Is heretical.
Oh, he did. And he made a public apology for a lot of that.
He sure did. And these people have no sense of guilt. They have no inclination to recant. And to what I say, you know, to err is human, to repent is divine, but to persist is devilish. And that is exactly what they're doing. They are persisting with intent. To the detriment of our nation.
And that's the thing. If they want to go, metaphorically speaking, if they want to go to hell, that's fine by me. But I don't want to be taken along for the ride. And that's exactly what's happening in this country.
You know, my dad used to say when people would pass him on the interstate doing 150 miles an hour, he would say, son, hell's only half full. There goes another one. And that's exactly what these people are doing. They are proceeding at a breakneck speed to ruin this country and to try to drag the rest of us with them so they can enjoy it during their brief lifespans or whatever they want to call their existence on this earth.
Well, precisely. You know, I just got a note in from Cindy out in the Great Northwest, Jim, and I think you might identify with these sentiments. She says, you know, it's the terminology, Bob. She says, Grover Norquist is not trying to drown the government in a bathtub. He and his ilk are trying to drown America in a bathtub. They're un-American as hell. They're traitors. They come from within. And each and every politician who allows them to continue is not living up to their oath of office. This is a war against the people of America, against working people. And terminology is important to keep the terms of this war correct. It ain't Afghanistan. It's here at home. The war is here. Afghanistan is a dog and pony show.
Got it. You know, these people, I mean, for example, they just uncovered, what, 11 Russian agents?
Yeah, that's a weird, very strict. I thought we were past all that.
Well, we're not, apparently, but I mean...
What do we have that they're interested in now?
No interest, I mean, no country with adversarial intent toward us would need to have to deploy people of this nature. They're doing it to us right there, up in D.C., and had for the past 20 years at least. And with these people like Grover Norquist and Rush Limbaugh and, oh, God, I don't even want to mention the rest of the people because I don't...
Oh, yeah, and the list is both exhausting and nauseating.
It is nauseating, absolutely. But, I mean, when I saw that, I said, good God in heaven, what is going on here? But I think the report card speaks for itself, and I don't have a whole lot else to add. I think I'm done. But I just wanted to share.
Well, I appreciate it, Jim. Thank you very much, and thank you for that list. It was enlightening.
Okay. Good night, Bob.
Take care, Jim. Bye now. And good night to the shady lady. I think that was the shady lady meowing in the background. Jack writing in from Shreveport. He says, upon hearing your words about the barber advertisement, my thoughts return to a question I've asked myself many times: how do the right wingers simultaneously praise the founders while despising the government they set up? All I can come up with is that they just believe what they're told because they're authoritarian followers. Any thoughts? I think Jack has said it very truly. They do, and what it boils down to is when you are an authoritarian, you do not question what you are told. You merely, if you're told to march, you march. If you're handed two things that are mutually incongruous one to the other, like praising the founders but hating the government they formed, well, to you and I, that creates intolerable levels of cognitive dissonance. To them, it's nothing. It is simply nothing. Because, and this is important, they don't think about it. Let's get that real clear. They don't think about it. And we move onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, I'm proud to be an American, because at least I know that I'm free. What's going on, Bob?
Hey, what's up, Spike?
Not much. That's what went through my head when I heard those ads you were playing before. What state is that from?
That's Alabama.
Now, why are they quoting Abraham Lincoln in Alabama? That's what I'm
Oh, Spike just got the toaster for tonight. Why are they quoting Abraham Lincoln in Alabama?
Because, you know, last time I checked, they're still bigger fans of Jefferson Davis's worldview than Abraham Lincoln's in many parts of Alabama.
Yeah, you would be correct, just as they are in central Pennsylvania.
Yeah, well, yeah, especially if you're a Latino in central Pennsylvania. Look out.
You know, not that I'm rubbing it in or anything, but you know better than I.
Yeah, well, that's the demographic Lou Barletta goes after when he runs for office in Pennsylvania. But, but then again, when your base is a group of people who their entire knowledge of history is what they heard last 30 seconds ago.
Well, I'm not kidding. You know, the Tom Coburn of Oklahoma was questioning Elena Kagan today, telling her that the Declaration of Independence was the law of the land.
Law of the land. More like a proposal, really. They were a much longer process on that. But, yeah, well, who was the one that asked her what she was doing on Christmas?
Oh, I missed
that.
No, I don't know if I want to. I don't know if I want to even contemplate that. But no, what? Oh, that was Lindsay. I live in the world's largest transparent closet, Graham.
Okay, all right. It's hard to keep track of which a-hole is the one smearing feces of the. Yeah, there's Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III.
See, I've got everybody saying it.
Yeah, then there's Graham, there's over fake tan boner, who isn't necessarily part of the hearings, but it's hard for me to keep track of who's the idiot saying this stupid thing today from the right, because they say there's so many of them.
Oh, you can't keep up, don't try.
Right, well, the Daily Show recently showed it of many clips they've been showing of the Fox and Friends morning show with the one guy when there was the incident trying to clean up the oil spill and the robot hit the containment thing, so they had to kind of try over again, whatever.
Yes.
And his comment was, I'd like to ask the robot, what was the robot thinking? And
oh, I saw that clip of Jon Stewart and hurt myself.
Yeah.
Laughing.
What was the robot thinking? I don't know. Is this Star Wars? I didn't really see C-3PO was down there actually working on it.
Making all those little bleepy noises, R2-D2?
Yeah, if we had droids like that, we probably would have sealed this thing by now. Unfortunately, our robots are dependent on the idiots.
Well, I'm just waiting for Sharon Angle out in Nevada to suggest that we stop the leak by cramming some unemployed people in it.
Because
after all, they're spoiled, you know, right, Spike? They're spoiled.
Yeah, oh, yeah, because they pay you so much money to collect unemployment in this country. I mean, you'll be so rich you'll need food stamps. Yeah, it's living large.
Don't spend that $309 a week if you're getting it all in one place.
Yeah, trust me, there's a lot of people not even getting that anymore. And God knows, and all the things are getting cut now, the dumbest things you could be cutting in a bad economy. Just like in Pennsylvania, the biggest cuts from our state budget that's about to be passed will be for library funding. Because, you know, nobody uses the library when the economy is down. It would make more money up to cut library funding because people will have more money in their pockets to give.
But I got a good idea. How about we don't cut the libraries at all?
That too, yeah.
Because, well, I mean, yeah, I'm just silly that way. How about we cut some defense spending?
Yeah, many other silly things we've been spending a lot of money on. Or for that matter, it's laughable in Pennsylvania when someone says I don't see the stimulus money at work when we have the most massive road project construction going on in Pennsylvania because pretty much all of our bridges are crap. Since really they probably hadn't even been maintained since Casey Sr. was governor, which was kind of a long time ago now. And they were probably even done on the cheap under him. God knows how many highways were just kind of patch jobs through Pennsylvania. So there's like a ton of road construction projects going on in Pennsylvania, all with that money. Basically, the only industry doing good right now in Pennsylvania is the road construction industry. And that's mainly because the government handed out a crap load of money for these projects. Otherwise, even that wouldn't be going on. So soon enough, we'll have nice roads. We just won't have any jobs to drive to on them in Pennsylvania. Unless, of course, you're on a road curb and you're driving to wherever road construction is and working. That's pretty much the face of Pennsylvania employment these days. But then again, the corporate media says the economy is getting better. So it must be getting better because that's what the rich people are telling us. So, therefore, it must be true. I know that much from watching.
Well, they would, yeah, right, because they wouldn't say it if it wasn't. That's why they're rich.
right, because we need to depend on the rich people. Just like I'm sure it's all the right-wing talk shows. He's spreading this talking point, but the boycotting BP stations, that only makes things worse because where are they going to get the money to fix the spill? I don't know, all the other oil rigs they have around the world.
Well, yeah, and another one of those great Jon Stewart moments. BP's going to fix their well. They can't even clean their restrooms.
Yeah. And by the way, it's hard for me to feel sorry for a lot of, because most of your BP franchises are owned by someone who owns.
Yeah, that's just some schmuck trying to earn a living.
Right, but most of them are owned by someone who owns a ton of them. The independent franchisee gas station operator, there's so few of them even left in this country at this point, it's absurd. We happen to have one actually on the other side of the town who's an Exxon.
Right, but I mean, you know, you think about that boycott BP, I tell you, that's really helpful because you're really sticking it to the man by making sure that revenues fall enough that some kid making minimum wage behind the counter, or more likely, some woman working the second shift making minimum wage behind the counter because when she gets off there, she's going to go to work somewhere else. You're really sticking it to the man when you make sure that she loses her job.
Yeah. Yeah. There is that as well. Well, they're also the victims of the fact that their employers are such Scrooges often anyways, even if they're not being boycotted, they're looking for ways to...
Well, you might be too young to remember this, but do you remember when and maybe not. It's okay if you don't. When self-service gas stations proliferated, are you aware of the world that existed before them?
Where someone pumped your gas?
Yeah. Oh, they didn't just pump your gas. They came out. You told them how much gas you want. You know, fill her up. $5 worth, you know, whatever. They pumped your gas. They kicked your tires. They washed your windshield. You paid them, and you went along your merry way. But you know what? That cut into the profit margin.
You know what, though? There's one place where they might wash your windows or they pump the gas, but they're not usually going to check your oil. In New Jersey, by law, which this is a sad commentary about New Jersey, that you can't pump your own gas. It has to be pumped for you because too many people in Jersey were leaving the pumps when it's still in the car. So Jersey actually had to pass a law because their drivers are such idiots, apparently, in Jersey.
And I'm going to get hate mail over what you just said about Jersey. You realize what you're doing?
You know, the dumbest traffic laws in the world. I mean, seriously, New Jersey.
New Jersey traffic laws. Okay, let's see if we can work this out in one of those law school entrance test the analogy questions. The motor vehicle laws in New Jersey, traffic laws in New Jersey, are as to liquor laws in Alabama.
Or maybe incest laws in Alabama.
Nah.
It's such a moneymaker in Jersey, first of all, traffic court. I mean, it's basically a crazed.
That's why one of my best friends refers to highway patrolmen as tax collectors with funny hats.
Yeah, I mean, Jersey, it's really kind of out of hand. Basically, it's a big way of how they're, I mean, and it's before Christie was governor when they taxed people. They used it as a heavy way of the tax base. Now that they're, quote, cutting taxes, they're just going to increase the amount of ways they're going to nickel and dime you with fines and tickets, with New Jersey traffic laws and all sorts of ways. I mean, it's also to the point where if you just get a ticket in Jersey, 80 million lawyers are sending you letters saying, I will represent you for your speeding case where you're 8 miles an hour over the speed limit. In Pennsylvania, anytime I had an issue in traffic court, I never once was bothered by a lawyer saying they wanted to represent me. But you go to these traffic court things in Jersey, I mean, it's like lawyer palooza going on here with all the lawyers for everything. And I get why you might have a lawyer for a DUI case, but I mean, there's cases with a lawyer and where they're just trying to plead down a fine for speeding. I mean, it's a total sham of a legal system. Makes me glad I live in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. I actually get very afraid when I leave the state because I know my own state's court system enough where I feel confident not only will I not get kind of screwed, but in the same, I don't necessarily need a lawyer to take care of myself. Once I leave the state, it's a whole other world out there. I like the Pennsylvania Commonwealth magisterial system a little better. Sometimes better judgments are made too. But Jersey is just, it's such a money wreck. And my ex was from Jersey and she was not a very good driver.
Now we know, Spike, where all the animus comes from. It's okay.
Well,
you're working it out. I understand.
I also worked several jobs in Jersey and had to commute with these people. So you can't make a left turn in Jersey. You need a whole other road paved that they call quote-unquote jug handles. Basically extra pollution added because they can't figure out a left turn arrow in Jersey. So they have to create a whole road to make a left turn.
You're just giving giving Jersey a workout tonight.
Well, that's the situation. I don't know what else to say. You might be a little old to get that reference, but the younger listeners right now are laughing at that. Yet another Jersey reference. All without once reference.
Oh, the Jersey Shore.
Yeah, there you go.
The
situation, yeah.
Yeah, that's the situation.
And I can tell you, there's a part of Jersey where there are people like that, like there's no tomorrow. That's why Chris Christie's governor there, is because those people came out in numbers to vote. Yeah, I avoid that side of the river at all costs. although I'm going into upstate New York, which New York State kind of frightens me a little, but I will be in upstate New York this weekend, so hopefully things will go well for me up there.
Just traveling or business or pleasure?
A little of both. The up at Watkins Glen.
Oh, I had a feeling Watkins Glen was going to come into play here.
Yeah, the IndyCar series is racing on the 4th of July. The IndyCar series, which, unlike NASCAR, uses ethanol, has several female drivers. It's not to be mean. One of them maybe kind of is more there on looks. I'm not even referencing Danica Patrick so much there.
No, but I do love her semi-salacious ads for GoDaddy.
Do you think
I've got what it takes to be a GoDaddy girl? Oh, Jesus. I just want to buy a domain name. You know, go away.
But there's also, drivers from other countries other than just white Christian America in the series. So excited to see a diverse series racing on America's birthday, which kind of more...
Well, you know, or somebody turning left.
Well, I don't mind. Actually, I don't mind the overtracks at all. Having grown up near a triangle track, which is kind of an oval. Those courses are cool because they go left and right also.
Right. I find road racing much more interesting. Hey, Spike, I got to roll, brother, because I got all six lit up. So you take care and have a happy weekend.
I certainly will, especially since the humidity will be low, which my asthma will appreciate very much.
Indeed. Travel safely and enjoy the race.
Have a good one.
All right. Later. Spike calling from PA. Yeah, remember remember those signs that said happy motoring? And there was another sign, and they gave you green stamps, S&H green stamps, that you then saved, and once you had a million books, you could get a folding lawn chair. But there was a different approach to being a customer once upon a time. It was all predatory. But it at least had the patina of appreciation of your hard-earned dollars. Let's see. Keep it rolling, Bob. Quit babbling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Hey, Sandra.
So, owning a gun is a pre-existing condition? how stupid are those people? That exchange, I ain't got nothing good to say about whatever her name is, but her pause on that one was hilarious. She was like, what the fuck? You know, you could just tell because she didn't know what the hell the guy was asking her. And she answered him, but graspily. What planet? The whole idea that, okay, whatever, we have rights that's not given by anybody load applied to guns? Say what?
And I sat there, and you're right, I sat there watching this exchange between Senator Coburn and Elena Kagan, and I've got misgivings too. But that bemused expression on her face.
Was that Coburn? I thought it was Grassley.
No, that was Coburn.
Oh, okay.
Where he was asking her about Blackstone's, the definition of natural rights, and does that extend to, never mind the fact that, Blackstone was writing at a time when you defended yourself, with a pike. But, right. That bemused expression on her face, Sandra, was precious.
Well, it's just, the whole thing is like some sort of, it's so pointless. I can't even believe it. How long is it supposed to go on for?
I don't know. Does it wrap tomorrow?
Whatever, I'm just sort of laughing at the idea of, some dyke on the Supreme Court. I'm sorry. That's just making me roll. I don't care what they say. Whatever. I'm looking at chick and saying, oh, no, please. Anyway.
Yeah, I know. and the whole kerfuffle over whether or not the military, that drops bombs on people was fairly treated by Harvard. Just devastating. Some of this was like British farce.
Yeah, I know. And the other thing I wanted to say about that is, that Sessions, he is really a disgusting individual.
He is a disgrace.
Oh my God, he is just he's disgraceful. It's terrible, terrible. I'm like, are you kidding me? And just looking at dude, I mean, what rock did he wash up under? He's horrible, awful. I mean, if you think he's doing himself a service, too much exposure, dude.
No, but that's the thing. You and I are culturally cut off from the people that he is for whom he is grandstanding, because there. I kid you not. You know, I mean, remember, I've been there.
Yeah.
There are people down there that think he's a great statesman, a great statesman just in the long history of southern senatorial greatness. I've heard it said.
Oh dear God! Well, he's just horrific. I've seen plenty enough of him, really. If I don't ever see him again, that would be just fine for the rest of my life, for real. I mean, because the Senate in itself, when you get a good gander, you're like, ew, you know, you don't want, you know, it's too much. And so anytime they're able to grandstand like this, it's not very nice. It's a good thing that you only get like two people watching this shit because.
Sorry.
You know. But, I mean, that chick, she gonna get put on. Isn't this just sort of a formality at this point? Well, there's nothing she can say. She got the lingo down and she's doing the dance. But there was one interesting thing is that what's-his-face in the closet asking her, where's your agenda? All the other Bush's ones had an agenda. Where's yours? I was like, snap, what happened? He must have had a brain fart. Because I'm like, what are you saying, dude? You better step up and shut up. I can believe it.
You know what? One thing from a technical standpoint that I did find interesting. Now, remember, Tom Coburn is he's a physician. and if you want to have one of those what sort of fresh hell is this moments, you're not going to be okay with this, Sandra. He's an OBGYN.
Oh, you know, I'm sorry. I'm real sorry you told me that, man. No, see.
And he got, it gets better. He got elected to the Senate of the United States from Oklahoma by giving dire warnings to Oklahomans that there was a burgeoning outbreak of lesbianism among junior high school girls in Oklahoma. And it had to be stopped.
I have no response.
There is, but that's okay because there's not one.
I'm always, of course, because I'm, you know, kind of sexist, but I'm always fish-eyeing men who are in that branch of medicine, if you get my drift.
Right, yes.
As a female, when it's time to go and get that done, I really am not running to a man, I'll be honest with you.
No, and you know, Agnes has raised all the girls on the premise that we will always try to have a female OBGYN.
And it's just kind of just easy just overall. So anyway.
But Bob, you know, but to be fair and do equal time on this, I remember when Agnes had an appointment, and I'm not telling tales out of school. Had an appointment when she was carrying our 16-year-old now, and she was getting, you know, checked, and she was being checked by a woman, and I'd sort of, you know, kind of looked away because I'm old-fashioned and geeky and stuff, but I kind of looked away, and the next thing I hear is, "Sister, cut your nails." And then that was Agnes saying that because.
Oh dear God!
Trim your nails.
Speaking of nails, I was trying to see home chick's nails. We were tried and true test right there, but I didn't really get a good look.
Yeah, this coming in from David in Tennessee. Her agenda. Agenda? My agenda? Well, lunch when we break, then a nice Merlot and a foot soak when we finish.
Oh, dear God. I know. I mean, it is. It's just, I don't know. You know, these are the times when I wish things weren't so serious and horrible because there's so much fun and frivolity from that whole business. But anyway, the other thing I wanted to call you about was, did you see that? I don't know if you looked at the New York Times today, but they had for a minute a story about, you know, the expanding, never-ending waiting list for poor people with HIV.
Yes, I did see that.
Okay.
And it's tanking, right?
It's hideous. It's just sort of growing exponentially, you know. At one point, it was down to zero, that waiting list. But since the recession, depression, it blew up. And, you know, they had anecdotal or just stories about someone saying, oh, well, I need this drug. And the worker saying, well, I really don't know what to tell you. And, you know, those sort of things. So these are real sort of stories of, okay, now people are being told, well, you know, you just need to go somewhere and die. So that all, you know, once again, no funding.
Yeah, and once again, yeah, we're in financial trouble, so necessarily the stuff we cut is our services and goods and need meeting for absolutely the weakest, most most fragile among us.
The lesser people.
Yeah, there's your the small people.
Or Alan Simpson, the lesser people. I mean, that's the one that kills me. That's the quote.
Yes, yes.
But, it's just stunning to see. No movement on this unemployment thing again. And guess what? I read a report that, oh, no, the jobs report, you know, we back to, I think they're saying 100,000 lost. We back to...
Oh, did we revise last month's numbers?
Well, yeah, and they're predicting like 100,000 or something. So we're in a losing column again.
Do we ever get, you know, but that's the question. Do we ever get back to the point where we're not losing? That's the whole thing about, you know, I've been falling so long, I feel like gravity's gone and I'm just floating.
Right. Well, no, we're told by Obama when they get all defensive, well, we were losing 720 per month, you know, when he first got in.
Right.
So now we're losing maybe 100,000, so that's an improvement.
Yeah, that's a win.
And so the new normal that they're trying to hit us with is this permanent 10%. Anyway, the other thing I wanted to bring to your attention was this. Andy Stern, you know, trying to talk about, oh, we need to invest a sliver of Social Security into the market.
I am so done with Andy Stern. I can't tell you how done with Andy Stern I am.
Anyway, I was like, oh, no. I have to MF-er.
You know what Andy Stern reminds me of? You know how everybody belongs to a union in China?
He's
that kind of union boss.
No, I don't think he's ever seen a corporate agreement he couldn't get with. No, I mean. But
and remember when I was at the America's Future Now conference back at the beginning of this month, it was Andy Stern who stepped to the podium there and said, as liberals and progressives, we must forget about the days of FDR and the New Deal. And said, you know, there's more time distance between FDR and us than there was between FDR and the Civil War. And we've just got to forget about it. It's a different kind of economy, and we have to move forward in this brave new world. And I was so proud. I was so proud when I heard that Leo Girard of the steelworkers had stepped to the podium the following morning and said, you know, basically, eat and die.
Yeah, there is no distance between justice. You know what I'm saying? Bump that. You know, that's just a bunch of BS. Economic justice is always in vogue. What is he talking about?
But remember, this was after the whole blow-up with the Blanche Lincoln thing. Remember that the for-profit media referenced Andy Stern as being, what was it, the Obama administration's closest ally in the labor movement.
Well, yeah, and of course...
That's like not having an ally in the labor movement.
Yeah, that's like, well, that doesn't help us. Sorry, I mean, you know, that's the kind of comment you have to come back with that, especially when you got Obama talking about what the Chinese need to do, and I believe in free trade. And it's just like, oh, my God, his little speech today. You know, so there's no daylight between Obama and the neoliberal endless.
Not where this stuff is concerned. It certainly doesn't appear to be the case.
The constant reinflation of the bubble, and I don't know. I don't even have much to add this evening. I was just sort of the Andy Stern thing was just kind of doing my head in because I'm you know keeping an eye on the Social Security business, and someone needs to tell him that Social Security is an insurance. It's not a fucking pension. I'm sorry to cut.
Just need a little, you know, a few flips on the wall switch just to get the lights going, because you're absolutely correct.
No, it's on purpose, though, Bob. This ain't, you know what I'm saying? I don't believe these
things. Right. They're changing the terms. They're changing the terms in which we think about Social Security by telling lies about what Social Security is and isn't. My God, while I was watching the Kagan hearings today, CNN broke away. Or maybe I changed channels, and they were babbling. They're taking phone calls on headline news now.
Oh, you're good.
And then the topic of debate was, should we raise the retirement age to the Social Security retirement age to 70?
Yeah, I've heard that one. That's out there now.
Why aren't we, you know, and Tom Hartman said this, and I said this several years ago, too, why aren't we talking about lowering the retirement age to 55 so you get more people into the workforce so that you're paying, you know, you got more people paying, you know, into the system who at least have jobs?
No, and not only that, why don't they ever talk about raising the ceiling on that?
Well, that's heresy, because then you'd have to pay you can raise the ceiling, but that just means that you're going to have to pay more benefits to the rich.
No, Social Security insurance is everyone in, no one out. It's the kind of program that the conservatives hate desperately, which is why they want to destroy it. If you start means testing it, it becomes an entitlement, which means they can start cutting it. It's like for the poor.
Right. You know what I'm saying? Right. Yeah.
When you start doing that to the programs, that's when they're able to get at it. So everyone in. That's why it's been successful.
Exactly. But again, it's a case of changing the facts, changing the system by changing the way we talk about it. One of those callers to headline news today said, well, when Social Security came in, it wasn't anything like what it is today. And you know, Social Security's not used the way it was and blah, 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 blah. It was all just total BS. And while this idiot is saying this, I'm thinking, yeah, dummy, when it came in, the persons of color couldn't collect it because they were, in many cases, farm workers, sharecroppers, domestic workers, and those people were left out in the cold in the original Social Security.
Yeah, exactly. And when they reformed it in Reagan's era, they doubled the damn payroll taxes, you know, to accommodate the so-called population increase of the baby boomers, which was BS anyway, because the architects of Social Security already factored that in.
Yes.
If you look at the layout of that program, it's freaking brilliant what they did, you know, when it was created. So I'm sick of hearing the alarms on this just because the government has ripped it off so much that it needs to pay it back. But it's a program that's like a cycle. We pay into it, and then we get it paid back with conservative investments and blah, blah, blah. It's an insurance. I don't know. I'm sorry.
What you're doing is you're shining a very bright light, Sandra, on what is going on with this, because what it, and how they are, because, again, remember, from the moment it was passed, there has never been a moment when Republicans have not quietly talked about how they were finally going to kill it.
Yeah, exactly. No.
And they've attacked it as socialism, communism, and now, you know, it's taking your money when you could be making a fortune in the stock market.
Yeah, no, but the idea that someone like Stern or any of these fake progressive people on this commission talking about investing any of it in the stock market, have they not been here for the last 3 years?
But again, it's a function of them saying, well, you know, I mean, these things happen on the market, but the market will always recover. The market is self-correcting.
No, No, it's just...
No, it's not.
It's just, you know, if they just want to finish the last of those programs off, because it's also, I guess, Medicare and Medicaid, they want that too, you know?
They want... Well, it's like Reverbo said last night, they're trying to finish us off.
Yeah, anyway, I mean, and of course, you know, I just feel like, at least I'm a broken record at this point, because there's like, you know, several pressing things that's going on. One is the persistent high unemployment that they're trying to make permanent in this country, and also this deficit BS, where they've shifted all their bad debt onto the balance sheet of us, and now we have to pay that. I mean, it is so evil, I can't even believe it.
No, and meanwhile, you've got these idiots over in the Senate with that Kabuki theater we were talking about earlier, where, again, it was Tom Coburn from Oklahoma asserting that America was better with no women on the Supreme Court, and got away with it. And at least Amy Klobuchar cleaned his clock for him afterward.
Oh my God! Yeah, well, no, you know, it's just definitely people are operating on different planets. I mean, I have to say, I just, you know, I don't know. I'm just so appalled at this sort of not taking care of the basic social contract. You know, we were always told if unemployment gets beyond a certain percentage, then certain things kick in. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, yes, I do.
And they stay kicked in until the private demand is brought back to take care of it. But now the government is just assuming that the private demand is just going to what, magically appear? I am confused.
No, you're not confused. You're rational, Sandra. They're the ones who are confused and engaging in semi-psychotic magical thinking.
Well, it's bad because I just read a report where there's been the lowest issuance of bonds, like corporate bonds being issued since 2004. So they're just sitting on a bunch of cash. So
yes.
They're not expanding investments. You know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, right, but why would they want to do that when they're getting cash for free? You know, if you get free money and you go out and spend it, what good was getting free money?
Well, exactly, and also they're not going to expand as long as, you know, no one's buying their product, so it's just sort of a self-defeating, deflationary cycle. I don't know. You know, like I said,
I know. And by the way, you got some fan mail from Reverbo who said, you know, with regard to you, he said, it's those timely imprecations. He said, tell Sandra I cited her at least four times last night. I'm too shy to tell her myself.
Oh, no. Oh, no, we're in real trouble now.
I said last night, you know, why not, you know, can we please let Oklahoma go with Texas when they secede? I know they don't care much about each other, but they can go play football by themselves. They can go bowling alone. I don't care anymore. And because, again, I come back to it, Sandra, people elect fools like Coburn.
Oh.
People elect Jefferson Beauregard Sessions the Hood.
It's too much. It's really
and I think it's okay to not like people for how they vote. Because with all of the things that you've described, we're coming to a place where we've got to have some sort of understanding of the people who oppose us, and we are being outright opposed. You know, Tom Coburn claiming that we were freer in Americans are losing their freedoms. We were freer in 1980 than we are now. How can he say that and lightning not just come down and be done with him when it was the 8 years of the Bush administration where we lost so many of those damn freedoms?
Oh, I know. No, it's unbelievable. I mean, that's why. I mean, I know Obama was attacking what the Republicans are doing, but it's like he should have been doing this, you know, day one.
And don't just do it a little bit, you know. Either go all in or leave the table.
Yeah. No. I mean, I appreciate what he's trying to say, but you know, I am really confused by his playbook at this point. I gotta say, don't know what's going on.
I don't think you are in the least bit alone, Sandra.
Okay, listen, I'll let you go.
You have a good evening.
You too.
Later. Bye now.
Bye.
Sandra calling from California. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
We're Bob.
Yes, indeed. Cossack, what's up?
A couple of points I wanted to hit on.
Go right ahead.
First of all, we keep getting told that we need to keep cutting taxes and cutting taxes, correct? Well, here's the problem. You follow that logic to its logical end, and why don't we just cancel all taxes on everything? And
hang up and just hang up the phone on the idea of government.
Correct. I mean, don't they see there's a problem here? You know, the wonderful society they live in, the one that has, you know, relatively guaranteed clean water coming out of your pipes and the electricity that comes in and, you know, all these nice little things that you have, like weather bureaus, that all goes away.
Yeah, farm extension services, right.
Right. Every road becomes a toll road, somebody's toll road.
Yeah, and eventually, because of the profit motive, Cossack, every road that becomes a toll road becomes eventually a gravel road.
Right.
Because you're not going to plow those profits back into resurfacing.
Well, and the problem of it is people aren't thinking, you know, this means essentially that you're going to be stopped every block to pay a toll, essentially.
Oh, heck yeah.
Yeah.
Because, again, it's not about maintenance, it's about profit taking.
Yeah, but don't people see this? Isn't that kind of glaringly obvious that, you know, because they want to...